This week, Sony made waves by announcing its retreat from events, but speculation is that they're saving money, time, and effort in a quieter year. They'll be back. It's only inevitable. That's just one story to catch up on. Join us for plenty more news from around the gaming universe starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It's Orange Lounge Radio live tonight, episode number 753 for this November the 25th of 2018. My name, Rob Roberts, and his name, Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
We are back after a week off. We weren't here last week, and that was my bad. I'll get to that in a minute. Not joining us in studio tonight, Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers. She is still on work leave, unfortunately, for a little while longer, but she'll be joining us live in studio December 9th, I think is the day she'll be here, which may be, on the current trajectory I'm planning, I think December 9th is going to be our last Shoutcast show. If you haven't already heard the news, our live show is going to move over to Twitch. Nothing will change with the podcast. It will still be a podcast feed as always was. In fact, I was reminded while we were doing our call with Bobby tonight earlier, we've kind of done this before. We used to be on Justin TV back in the day, and apparently somebody in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com dug up some old highlights. So if you want to see like 2008 video clips of OLR, our old Twitch TV channel, Orange Lounge Radio.
We didn't have a camera, though.
No, we did.
Did we?
Oh, yeah. You forgot? Yeah, remember? Remember the house I used to live at with John, I'll say.
Yeah.
with the lights, the Christmas lights in the
in the garage.
In the garage? That was on video. Remember, you played the Final Fantasy 13 demo?
Yeah, but I thought we had that, like, just that was the video.
No, there was both, because remember I had that camera,
that blue
tiny little camera? Yeah. That thing broke, by the way. That's long gone. That's when I was doing those vlogs on YouTube for a little while. That's another project that's long gone. So, anyway, yeah. So it's funny. What's old is new again. But we're going back to the Twitch thing in a few weeks. So we're targeting December 16th, but don't hold us to that. But anyway, so we're here in studio now doing the podcast the way we always have. And by the way, I do want to emphasize it's still going to be Orange Lounge Radio even after we move. It's just going to be, yes, there will be some, you'll get to see us doing a radio show, but it is still a radio show. So I don't want our people that listen to us on their commutes, and I know we have like data entry during the day people and other like tech jobs where they just listen to us in their earbuds while they work, and do that. And I just, for you guys, it's not going to change, but it is kind of a big change for us and an exciting one as well. But honestly, I've joked time and time again, this computer that we do the show on is still running Windows XP. So this technology is circa like 2006, 2007, and it's time to modernize a little bit. So it's going to be really exciting and hopefully get us some new folks here at Orange Lounge Radio. Really excited. So let's talk about video games. We are going to get it in the news in just a little bit. And we are going to cover, because it was the Thanksgiving holiday in the States this week, which I hope y'all had a awesome Thanksgiving and all that good stuff. Those of you in the States, anyway, if you're in other countries, you probably was just another week for you, but I hope you had a good week nonetheless. But since it was the Thanksgiving holiday in the States, there probably wasn't as much gaming news this week. There was a little bit. We'll get into that. But we're going to kind of combine the week we missed last week and touch on some of the big headlines from last week, because there's some big stuff that happened last week that we've got to give our insight on, like this whole E3 change. We'll get to that later.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Anyway, but to start off the show tonight, let me tell you about why I wasn't here last week. So I was in Las Vegas, and I was attending Final Fantasy 14 Fan Festival in Las Vegas, which was at the Rio Hotel, which is just off the Strip. About 5,000 people going to this event. I'm guessing that number based off the raffle ticket numbers that ran from 0 to 5,000. So I'm assuming there's about 5,000 people. Maybe you add in some press and things like that, too, is maybe like 5,500. But about 5,000 people, give or take, at this convention center at the Rio to celebrate Final Fantasy 14, which is, of course, the online Final Fantasy game. There is an older online Final Fantasy game, Final Fantasy 11, but that game, they kind of stopped doing expansions and all that for a little while ago. They're doing more minor updates with that game. I think there's a much larger player base on Final Fantasy 14 because it is the newer one. It is the game that's on PlayStation 4 as well as PC, and so this was really to celebrate that game. And they did do the new expansion, so I was out there in the audience during the keynote. If you guys are watching on Twitch, I think there actually was a moment you probably could have seen me on camera, but you would have had to know where to look, and I always find my reactions in those crowd shots really weird, so I usually try to look away anyway. But I was there when they unveiled the brand new expansion. Shadowbringers is the new expansion that they're doing for Final Fantasy 14. I keep wanting to call it Stormbringers, because the current expansion is Stormblood, and for some reason, it's another SB acronym. So you have Stormblood is the current expansion, and Shadowbringers is the new one. The first one was Heaven's Ward, so it was nothing, you know, SB, but it's weird that both acronyms are SB, so I keep wanting to say
Heaven's...
Stormbringers. I don't know. Yeah, Heaven's Bringer. Yeah, Heaven's Warb. But anyway, they announced the new expansion, and with that, they announced the Blue Mage job is going to be a part of, actually, Stormblood. It's going to be in the next patch. A little bit controversial, this Blue Mage implementation, because they're not implementing it like a normal job. They are going to be doing kind of like a special little... I guess, side events that you do more in a solo manner, and it's going to be capped at level 50, and you can do this whole, like, mass carnival up to, you know, level, like, 50 events and things. You go out in the field and learn spells. Apparently, you can do things in small groups, like, up to level 50, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep Blue Mage out of current rating and the current meta and out of progression. And that's a very controversial change because there's some people out there that were very much looking forward to Blue Mage and being able to play that in the progression. So it's kind of like you get this kind of like awkward implementation of the Blue Mage job. And so it's rubbing some people the wrong way. For me, I guess we're lucky it's there at all in a way, but I'll give it a chance. I'll check it out.
They change that once like the other expansion
comes out?
And
that's the thing. They could. Maybe if the rabble is really great and, you know, they could always re-tinker it to allow Blue Mage to just cap up to level 80, which will be the new level cap, and be in the progression content and maybe limit the skills. I think they're really worried about balancing, and they were really worried about Blue Mages getting rejected from parties because they don't know all the spells. Because there's going to be, they said, 49 spells you go out and absorb from monsters. That's the whole thing with Blue Mage, by the way. If you weren't familiar in Final Fantasy lore, like in games like Final Fantasy V, you would learn spells as a Blue Mage by fighting the monsters and getting it cast on you, basically. And then you may learn the spell. And they're kind of implementing it that way in Final Fantasy XIV. Except I think you just have to fight the mob. You don't necessarily have to have the spell cast on you. But still, you know, relatively close. So it's an interesting implementation. We'll see where they go with that. I think it's very interesting. It is not a part of the expansion. It's part of this expansion. So it's something that's leading into the next expansion.
So what's in the new expansion?
Yes. There will be more jobs in the new expansion. They didn't say what those are. There's a leak that called this Blue Mage thing and some other things. So if you want to believe the leak, there's going to be two more jobs. I'll let you go find that for yourself if you want to go look it up. But the other big thing that they teased, I'm very happy about this. So in years past at this event, Yoshida, who's the producer and director of 14, he wears a T-shirt that will tease something about the expansion. So a couple years ago, he wore a Batman T-shirt. And at the next FanFest, Dark Knight was a job. Get it? So then the last time, he wore a Scarlet Witch T-shirt. And guess what got announced at the next FanFest?
Red Mage,
right? Get it? So this time, he wore a Bugs Bunny shirt. And he pointed at it when he was talking about the new race. Although he wouldn't say what the new race was, but it's pretty much saying without saying that the Viera from Final Fantasy XII will pretty much certainly be the new race in Final Fantasy XIV. It's just not totally confirmed yet, but what other bunny races are out there? And it's, I mean, I'm super happy. Like, obviously, like, Fran is one of my all-time favorite Final
Fantasy
characters.
What he means to tell you is Space Jam is coming, too.
And I would be okay with that, actually, if that, you know, Final
new
Fantasy
race
XIV
is
in space.
Space Jam.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, all right, cool.
Now, one of the other big things they announced in the keynote was this trust system. So you're going to be able to, and Final Fantasy XI has this. They implemented it way later when the game was dying off and it was harder to find parties. What they did is they made it so that you could have NPCs in your party, basically, and they would function like normal party members. They're bringing that system to Final Fantasy XIV, but they're not doing it because Final Fantasy XIV is dying off. At least they're certainly not going to admit that's the case. And I don't think the game is. They're doing it because, this is really interesting, they realize that there are some people that although they want to play an MMO with friends, the story makes you do like dungeons and group content to progress in the story. Some people don't want to do the group content because they feel like if they're not pulling their weight, they're holding the group back. And it kind of gives that whole like anxiety of, you know, I'm playing with other people and they are relying on me and I don't want to fuck up. So basically, they're going to allow you to use these trusts to help you get through the story and do content without other people. And it's very strange because that was kind of a theme between that and the Blue Mage experience. I kind of felt like a theme I was hearing about this expansion was, here is an MMO you can play all by yourself. And I thought that was just very interesting. But I totally recognize, and I've even been in this position before, that sometimes you don't necessarily want to play with other people. You just want to be in the experience at the same time other people are experiencing it. So you can talk about that or life or whatever. It's a chat room with fire spells and great swords. That's what it is. That's what the MMO world is to some people. And that's totally fine. So I think it's very interesting that you have Final Fantasy XIV kind of embracing the solo experience in an MMO. What do you think? I know you don't play a lot of MMOs currently, Loki, but you spent a lot of time with Final Fantasy XI and so forth. I know you've dabbled in a few of them. What do you think about like the solo experience in MMO? Like, do you think MMOs should be built to play alone?
Sure. I like playing Final Fantasy XI alone.
Yeah.
Sometimes, unless I was up against a roadblock that I needed to have a party, like, but any sort of experience.
You get the trusts, and you don't need that anymore.
Granted,
it's interesting.
I didn't really have that problem when I was playing on that not-so-legit server where the XP boost was, like, times 10,
mm-hmm.
and that was awesome, because then I could solo all the way up to whatever I need to.
Let's go to our chat room for some feedback on this, because we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, VogNetwork.com, where we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf Show. And you can join us in our chat room at live.vognetwork.com. But I do want to start plugging away here when I mention, because you know I mention this at the top of every show, but I do want to start mentioning, if you aren't already following the network on Twitch TV, you might want to get over there and get on that VOG Network over on Twitch TV, because that is where we're going to be in the future in about a month, if all things stay on track. Some of the comments over at live.vognetwork.com. Dungeon Buster says, this is a nice gesture for 14. Pugs can either be awesome experiences or toxic nightmares. It's super nice to drop into a group with nice players, but getting toxic ones can ruin your night. And that's exactly right. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I can still optionally play with friends. I hated having to be like, hey, free company, while you're out there playing Moogamog, can you help me with this four-person dungeon way beneath you? Yeah, like maybe some people, you know, they want to be able to do the old stuff without having to ask people to run through it with them. So, yeah, it's something that trust is going to open up. It's going to be very interesting. So, anyway, you know, I'm sure a lot of the announcements have been online. I don't want to retread that territory too much. So what else happened at this event? Besides the keynote, well, they did a variety of panels. So they did some panels talking about the next patch that's going to include Blue Mage. They went into detail on Blue Mage. They did like a PvP tournament there, which I'm not super into PvP in 14, so it wasn't really something that was up my alley, but I know it is for some people, so that was cool. They did a big costume contest, and let me tell you, the cosplay was like Dragon Con level good. Like Final Fantasy 14 cosplayers go all out, and there was some really good stuff. So that was really cool to see. And they do like lore panels and all that stuff as well. While that's going on, it was interesting because this year they had it split. They had the very large room was kind of like their panel room, and they had some events in there. Some of you, I can't remember if I posted this on Twitter, but I took a picture of myself in front of this giant makeshift Aetherite crystal, which is like a home crystal, doing the little pose like I'm tuning to the crystal. So that is something that they had like in that room. And they had like some little silly carnival games that you could win like posters and stickers and, you know, very silly things for playing. So that was kind of neat. But then in side rooms, of course, they had one room that was all about playing Final Fantasy 14. And you could stand in line to do a new primal fight, Yojimbo, as a primal fight, which Yojimbo is actually already, I mean, Yojimbo is already in Final Fantasy X. That's where he comes from. But Yojimbo is already a dungeon boss, but they redid him for a primal fight. And all I'm going to say about it, I'm not going to spoil it, it's not the same as the dungeon fight. It's very, very different because there's a big twist at the beginning of the fight. You're not really fighting Yojimbo. You're fighting somebody else. So that's all I'm going to say is about that fight. And then let's see, you could do you could do one of the existing primal fights, which is basically, you know, eight people taking on a boss, but they would have various modifiers, like the bottom half of your screen is unusable or it's covered up entirely, basically, which kind of sucks because that's where your skills and actions are, or other silly modifiers like, you know, you could only use certain type of weapons, or it was sped up, or, you know, like half health or something. Like, there'd be all these different modifiers. So that was something you could, I think maybe one was that the bosses didn't telegraph any moves. That's pretty horrible, too. You could play the hard stuff. There was some type of like Eureka challenge where you kind of, so they basically had like different little like sub games within the game that it uses the game's engine and the game setups, but they're not really things that you can do in the game right now at home. So it's kind of neat that they have, you know, that whole thing set up. And then, of course, they had a big old merchandise booth, and they were selling a lot of that stuff. And, you know, I know this festival for a lot of people is a chance to meet up with free company members or guild members and people that they play the game with. I met a lot of new people. I had a good time meeting some new people that played the game and reconnecting with people that I used to play with. Like one of my old buddies that I played with back on McGarsimer was there. And so it was really cool to reconnect with him. And, yeah, just... you know, it's about kind of the community as well as the game. So that was what I skipped the show to see last week. Going to our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. I guess Shane joined our chat room or somebody that knows him very well, because the nickname is Shane Hates 14 Blue Mage. Yeah, I know he wasn't too happy with the implementation of that. Says in our chat, says, despite some information that made people mad or upset, overall, the con was the best they've done for North America so far. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I will say that is that the last two times I went, so they've done this every other year in the even numbered years to announce their other expansions. And 2014 with Heavensward, like the registration line was very long. The merchandise line was a nightmare. 2016 had some issues as well. So like this year, organization, I will give kudos to Square Enix, was done very well. There was no line for registration, like none. You walked right up. They scanned your code. You got your packet. You got your backpack. I don't know if you saw that when he came in, but I got a little Final Fantasy 14 backpack.
No, I did not.
And it had like loot inside it, so it's kind of nice. You just walked right in and picked that up. Even though this was the first year because of, you know, incidents that have happened in Las Vegas in the not too distant, you know, past and so forth, they had metal detectors for the first time that we all had to go through on the way in. And when I read that they were going to do that, I was like, oh God, that line to get in is going to be a mile long. It wasn't. I was pleasantly surprised. We moved right along into that thing. They got us through that nice and early to put us in a queue room in the back, so that way the metal detectors weren't a choke point, because people were lining up as early as like 5, 6 a.m. I know Shane went out there really, really early the day of the keynote. And so that was nice that the metal detectors didn't become a bottleneck. And they did the merchandise sales in advance online, so you didn't have to stand in line all day just to decide what you wanted at the merch booth. So honestly, they just did a lot of things that made it feel a lot smoother. But at the same time, because all of it was so smooth, you really started to notice the whole like, well, I'm kind of out of things to do. There's no panel right now. I've done the Yojimbo fight and all this other stuff. You know, the thing about Final Fantasy 14 Fan Fest is that's all it is Final Fantasy 14 stuff. But here's the thing. So you realize you're out of things to do. That's the time that you go hang out with your free company, or you meet some new people, you know, and hang out with them and so forth. So like that's part of the whole experience, I suppose, you know, talking about being in the same place and existing at the same time as opposed, you know, we're talking about like the solo experience in an MMO and so forth. So, yeah. Okay, now I know it's Shane because he knows this. He says in chat, Rob got stopped every time at the metal detector. Take that how you will. Yes, that's true. I set that metal detector off every single stinking time. And it wasn't my belt. It wasn't my watch. I don't know what it is. But every single time I was setting off that metal detector. And they'd have to do the whole wand. And, of course, they don't find anything with the wand. So I don't know what it is. It's my magnetic personality. No, I don't know what was setting it off. It was weird. Anyway. Let's see. Looking at other comments in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Shane is also reminding me to talk about the data centers. So yeah, and this is the last thing I'll talk about, because then I want to move on with some of the other headlines from the week. But one of the other like really controversial things they're doing with Final Fantasy 14, and I'm going to just flat out say one of the things I don't like, I know Shane is really pissed off about this Blue Mage thing, but honestly, like with the Blue Mage thing, I'm like, all right, it's there, and they can always fix it later. But this is the thing where I'm like, ugh, I wish they hadn't done this. But I understand why they're doing it. So what they're doing is they're making a third data center in North America. There's already two data centers. They're making a third. And here's the thing. There's a lot of stuff that you can do cross data center. But it's not like World of Warcraft, where admittedly in the early days of World of Warcraft, you could only do things on one server. But about three or four expansions in, they made it so that it didn't matter what server you were on. You could party up with people on any other server and so forth. In Final Fantasy XIV, you're still limited by your data center. So sure, you can transfer between servers, but it has to be servers on your data center. And now in the new expansion in Shadowbringers, they're going to do this whole world – or actually, no, I think this is part of the 4.5 patch. You can even go visit another server, but it still has to be within the data center. So there is still this big wall because, like, my friends that I used to play with are on Midgarsimer, which is one data center, and I'm on the other one now, Hyperion. So there's still this wall. I can't play with the people I used to play with because we're still on this. And the problem is, in the new expansion, they're going to be adding a third data center. So now there's going to be two walls. And they took the most populated server, Balmung, which there's a lot of inside jokes about Balmung and the roleplay, and it's going to the third server with a bunch of low-pop servers. So all these people are having to, like, if they have, like, a cross server group that's on a data center, it might be getting split up because of this change. But that was also kind of the nice thing about having some downtime is that you kind of start to ask people, so what's your server? Oh, you're going to be on the new one with me. Okay, so we should talk more because maybe we'll be able to group up. It's like people are suddenly like finding their new homes and things like that. But
it's like Final Fantasy XI all over again.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. So it's it's unfortunate about the whole data center thing. And I really hope in the near future they can really figure out how to take down those walls of the data center. But I feel like it's one of those things that they're kind of I feel like it's one of those things they're kind of trapped in. They're kind of trapped into it because of the way the game was built. Because remember, Final Fantasy XIV had a horrible first version, and they've been trying to fix it ever since, basically. So I just have this weird feeling they're kind of screwed in from that. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, that's enough about FanFest. Is there anything else I should be saying about FanFest, Loki?
Any news on Final Fantasy XI Mobile that was supposed to be...
No, this is only a 14.
Damn it.
No news on anything else but Final Fantasy XIV. Yeah. That's
care
it.
About 14 right now.
Yeah, right.
Unless
I know.
It goes like, you know, monthly fee free, then maybe.
Okay, so Bobby Blackwolf in chat. Let me explain this better. Bobby says, oh, so I can't transfer my character over to the server you're on. So as a kind of like, sorry we're screwing up all your like pre-mades and stuff, what they're doing is they're saying for a 2-week period, we are going to offer free server transfers. So when they create this third data center, it is going to be a nut house because everybody's going to use this opportunity of free data transfers to go to where they want to go. Now, once you've figured out what server you're going to be on, Final Fantasy is also implementing this. You can temporarily visit other servers within the data center. You can just kind of do that within game, but you'll be locked into that data center once the free move period is over. So I hope that makes sense. Because right now, you can move a character to any server you want for like 15, 18 bucks. I don't know what it is. I don't remember what it was I paid. But they're going to open that up and make it free for 2 weeks as their apology to, sorry, we're doing this big shuffle. We feel bad about it. So here's your chance to repick. It's going to screw up a lot of housing stuff because some people have invested a lot of gil in housing, but they're talking about reimbursements, like 3 million gil. They're trying to sweeten the pot. I don't know. It's going to be a lot. So I may not stay where I am, Bobby. I will let you know. I will let everybody, I'll tweet about it, what world I decide to go to. I honestly have not decided yet. There's just so many factors. I really have to kind of figure out, where are the people actually going to be playing regularly? Because I've kind of hit a ghost town experience on my old server, and I've hit a ghost town experience on my new server. So I'll stay on the new server if it's not going to be a ghost town anymore. I'll go back to the old server if it's not going to be a ghost town anymore. I'll go to a third server, a brand new server, if I find out there's a great community here that, you know, wants to have Rob there and do stuff. So I honestly don't have the answer to that question yet. And I think a lot of that will start to sort itself out when they announce the date of the server transfers. So I'm just not totally focused on that right now because, you know, patch 4.5 is still not even out until January, so the game is still a little bit stagnant until January. It's why I've been playing, even though I'm subscribed to 14, it's why I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft in between there. So, anyway. Let's see. Hopefully I explained that a little better. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I'm also okay with starting from level one because I forget how to play, especially if you can access trust from the beginning. Well, remember, Bobby, you can also just roll a new job and you'll have to start it from level one. And that could be another way, because maybe one of these new jobs will speak to you too. Who knows? So, you know, you got a lot of options. So something to think about. They haven't talked about how the trust is going to be implemented. So we'll see what happens with that. So. All right, I think that's all I want to say about Final Fantasy XIV, because I know not everybody plays the MMO, and I've talked at length about it. We have plenty more news to get to that has come up in the past couple weeks. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing these past couple weeks while we've been out. Loki, how was your gaming week?
My gaming week was all right. I didn't play a whole ton of things, but I did play a few things. So I got around finally to pick... I mentioned I was going to be picking up... Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, so I picked that up and I bought that, and I've been playing that quite a bit. I'm like 20 hours into it. I've already taken down 5 gyms, and I've gotten all the way to Fuchsia City, where I've got my Pokemon Go Park stuff. So it's great because, you know, it's like, oh yeah, there's all these, you know, version exclusive Pokemon and stuff. I'm like, fuck that. I've got like all this crap just sitting on my Pokemon Go account. I'm just gonna throw it on in there. Now, what am I doing with it? Do I really need, like, 50 different EVs? No, I don't. So I just put that all in there, so it was great to kind of fill in on that stuff. So right now I have a Pokemon Go Park that's just full of, like, Pokemon. You can actually have, I think you can transfer up to 1,000 Pokemon into that. So, like, I'm set for a while. I should be good. But I still have to catch everything because I've ran out of berries. That's kind of the annoying thing, too, is like, hey... You know, whereas, like, in Pokemon Go, I have all these berries. I'm literally, like, swimming in berries. In Pokemon Let's Go, you can't fucking find those anywhere. You have to keep catching things, and you sometimes get them, or you get them as bonuses for other things, but you can't buy them, which is annoying.
Walk the Pokemon, because you get
I know,
them from that too.
I know. I do. I was doing that, and then the problem is, though, is I have to keep transferring it back, and I keep switching between which Pokemon I want to level up, because I'm trying to figure out what's going to be the best to have against the final four. So I don't know. But I've been playing that quite a bit, and it's been fun. I've been a little bit grindy, though, but just I found that trading with randoms is also kind of working out, too.
I didn't even realize that this was a thing. So you just put in, like... Because the trading's weird. You don't go to your friends list or anything like you would in the other games. You just basically say... So you connect online, and then you say, put in a three... It's not picture. Even digit. It's the three picture code. It's just like if you've played the rating in Pokemon Go and done a private raid, it's just like that. But you're on the entire internet.
But there's a universal code that everybody's using, which is Pikachu, Pikachu, Pikachu.
Yeah.
And it's the first one.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you'll get matched up with some random person. And so that's what I did. It's like, I was like, well, let me just check this out and see whatever. So I did it. And then I was that's like, okay, I'm going to give you, because I just caught a bunch of slow pokes. I'm going to give you like a level 38 slow poke. And so I did that, and they... Oh, here's the Clefairy. I'm like, all right, that's cool, whatever. I don't really care what I get. But the Clefairy that I got was like level 53. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm going to do this some more. So
nice. I've been doing the planned trades with my buddy Justin that I kind of reconnected with at the Final Fantasy XIV Fan Fest. We've been able to do some trading because he has the Eevee version. I have the Pikachu version. So we've been able to trade some of the exclusives across. And like he texted me the other day because he's like, do you have Graveler? He's like at the exact same spot in the game I am. So he's like, do you have a Graveler that you want to like trade Graveler for Graveler? Because some of the Pokemon evolve by trading them. So we did Graveler for Graveler. So that way we both got Golems. And then I think we need to do it again for the Kadabras to get Alakazams. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing the pre-planned trades. I haven't tried the random stuff though, but
I should probably trade those then, because I can't do anything with them if they're just going to sit there. I'll just
trade them. Do you have your Switch? Let's trade.
I don't have my Switch with
God
me.
Damn it.
I thought about bringing it. I almost did, but I didn't. Next time.
Yeah, like Sia Tiberi in chat says, Grav for Grav. Yes, that's exactly what it is. G for G.
But yeah, and also it's nice that each of the Pokemon centers, they have like people that will trade you the Alolan Pokemon. So I got an Alolan Marowak, which, because I don't even have that in Pokemon Go. So just too bad, because they had one on the gym over here. Mm-hmm. Just right when I came in, I'm like, there's someone battling him. I can't. It's 3 stars or 4 stars.
Dope.
Can't solo that. It's like recommend party, 13 people. Nah.
There's some of the 3 stars you can do yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I've been playing that quite a bit. And then aside from that, Pokemon Go, I did ended up picking up the controller, the Pokeball Plus, only because my kids wanted to play with it. My youngest son was like really wanting to play Pokemon and he wanted the ball. So like I picked it up, and then my oldest son wanted me to give him Mew. I'm like, but I bought this myself. You know,
when you get a like, job, you can
I
have
Mew. I would love to. You know, I'm like, fine, okay, I'll give it to you. Unfortunately, you can't give it to him because he doesn't have a Nintendo account. So, sorry, you're out of luck. So I had to transfer Mew over. Mew actually is all right, but the only positive with Mew is you can give it any of the TMs. So you can, you know, kind of customize Mew however you want.
Yeah, I have Mew in my party right now, but I'm probably going to take him out. Like, I need other, like, harder counters, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I need things like Rhydon. I need things like, you know, that are just, like, really big counters.
I still haven't been able to get mine to evolve yet, my Rhydon. I
don't know if that's one of the ones you have to trade or if you just it's a higher level when it flips.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I'm
yeah.
just if it doesn't, you know.
Just transfer in a Rhyhorn from Go, yeah.
Like, yeah, seriously. So that's kind of what I've been doing. And then, let's see, aside from that, so my DDR machine, I finally got the replacement optical drive in last week. And sure enough, I put it in there and it doesn't fucking work. So then there was that problem. And it started acting up. Like, I was like, okay, well, what's wrong with this thing? Because it kept popping the tray out a bunch of times, and it just was not cooperating. It wouldn't read it. So I ended up having to take the optical drive apart, and I fixed it because I guess as they get older, the motors to pop the trays open and stuff like that, they wear out. And so you have to basically break the magnet that's in there a little bit and, you know, tweak it up so that it's higher off of the metal so that it's not strong, and then it works just fine. And sure enough, as soon as I did all that and tweaked it and put it back together, it worked fine. So I was able to put 4th Plus on my DDR machine now, so that's what I'm going to be playing this week. Although I miss having my speed mods already. I'm like, man, I loved 4th Plus or 4th Mix, but I'm so spoiled. I can't do it anymore. It's like, you know, I was trying to play doubles. I was playing Conga Feeling, and I love that song, but it's you're going to have to get used to reading that stuff again.
I can't wait to come over and play your DDR machine. We need to set a day
yeah,
to do that. Yeah. Awesome.
So anytime.
Okay. Anything else for your gaming week?
No, that's it. I didn't play any Red Dead Redemption, which is too bad because I'm having trouble like getting back into that because it's just so like engrossing.
I'm loving some of the clips I'm seeing coming out of that game. Like the lady who's like, "Won't you help me, my horse?" And like then she gets run over by a horse. Like just like out of nowhere, this horse comes just bail. Like it's I guess it might be like a bug, but it's like a really funny bug.
Yeah, the
like,
horse
not-
AI has never been like great. I mean, they do pretty well, but like sometimes the pathfinding stuff is not really great, and also deer are kind of crazy. But there's a lot of weird shit in that game. Like, there's, like, UFOs and ghosts and all sorts of, like, there's time travelers and stuff. And there's ties between this and Grand Theft Auto V with the Epsilon cult thing, Epsilon Project.
Weird. Yeah. I want to play Red Dead, but I'm not until it goes on sale, which will be a good long time. So
it probably won't be that long. But it's a great game. It's definitely worth it. It's very engrossing, and I haven't been able to work beyond the TV. It's the problem. It's my wife's been still watching all sorts of garbage.
What Shondaverse show is she on now?
She just finished season 2 of The Handmaid's Tale, so now she's watching. I don't even fucking know. It's just garbage. It's all garbage. Like, I don't even care anymore. It's just, it's some drama. It's anything that's got a drama in it, you know. So I've been unable. Look, we have goddamn fucking Netflix on the TV in the bedroom. It's like, you can watch TV and sit in bed. I'm almost at the point where I have to move my PlayStation in the bedroom, but like, I have a 4K fucking TV and a PlayStation Pro. I don't want to move it onto the 1080p TV.
And Hulu's on the Switch. You could watch that literally anywhere. But
well, we don't necessarily have Hulu. We have the wild world of the internet.
I see. Oh, I thought you were watching him in his tail.
No. Yeah, Hulu would be nice too, but we just don't do it. So I haven't been able to play that. And my friends wanted me to get, like, Fallout 76. But that game is shit. So, you know, but I like shit games sometimes. I just don't want to pay...
I don't
now $40 for it.
I don't usually get super into the Fallout games. Like, I think I almost said the Skyrim games. The Elder Scrolls games are kind of more my thing. I live for from Bethesda. I've tried the Fallout games. I just don't really get into them the same way. But I am not hearing good things about this new one. Like, I'm just like, everything I'm hearing about this new one is like, I guess maybe passing on this is probably the right thing to do.
They've already dropped it half price now.
That's
$39.99.
That's crazy to me.
It's seriously, this game is like. It seems No Man's Sky all over
it
again.
It just seems like it was half-baked yet
oh,
again.
Oh, it wasn't even half-baked. It was like quarter-baked. Or like,
it is eating the cookie dough. It is like you might those raw eggs might kill you.
Like, it's bad. It's bad. But, like, right. Everybody I talked to, they're having a lot of fun with it. But, like, as one of the online reviews I watched – you know, they compared it to, like, Billy Madison, where Billy Madison proves that you can have fun with a flaming bag of shit as long as you're with your friends.
It's like why I watch Showgirls.
Yeah, you can have fun with all sorts of dumb shit with friends.
I get it.
But it doesn't mean it's a good thing.
I hear you. All right.
So that's my gaming
week. All right, my gaming week. I've also been playing Pokemon Let's Go. Loki's talked at length about it. I won't say a whole lot more except for I like the fact that it's just basically like Pokemon Yellow, because I have the Pikachu version as well. And I saw a question in chat earlier that asked why the Pikachu version, not the Eevee version.
Kids, they want a Pikachu. I know I could have gotten Eevee because Pikachu is literally like right there at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
But they wanted me to get the Pikachu version.
I got the Pikachu version because just kind of informal poll on Twitter of everybody else I know, like Eevee seemed to be the more popular one. So I got Pikachu just so I could do the trading. So that's really it. There wasn't a whole lot of thought beyond that. And now, thanks to the connection with Pokemon Go and the fact that you can just pretty much bring anything in from that, like, you don't even really need, doesn't really matter which version of the game you have, I guess, in that regard. But I do like it. It kind of does feel, Loki, like a Bobby Blackwolf mode version of, and if you don't know that inside joke, that's what you call like the easy mode of a game is Bobby Blackwolf mode. It kind of feels like the Bobby Blackwolf mode of Pokemon Yellow, because I got to admit, I love that they took the like grinding of the catching of the mobs out of it, and they've just replaced it with the much simpler, like, flick your wrist and catch it that way.
It's still pretty grindy, and I don't even do the flicking wrist stuff because I use it in handheld mode, so for me, it's just motion controls.
No, I do. I was able to get the flick. I can even throw them left and right now. I kind of figured out how to. You just, what you do, you move your hand to the right, and you do a quarter turn of the little
so can you do curveballs and stuff in
no there? But that's how you make sure that's how I throw things to the right and the left every time is as I actually throw it to the left, I do a quarter turn of the controller and it always nails it. So that's kind of what's worked for me. But I basically in I'm only catch one of each Pokemon and then I move on. Like, and I think I have kind of missed some stuff.
You have to get that catch combo going in order to get your shinies.
Yeah, but I don't need shinies right out the gate. You know what I need to do is beat a fucking Pokemon game. Then I'll go back and get the shinies. If you complete the Pokedex, you'll get a shiny charm. Then they'll make catching the shinies either. So I don't give a fuck about shinies right now. I want to get through
the
game.
It's mildly easier.
I'm sick of getting teased because I cannot beat a Pokemon game. So I'm going to beat this one, damn it. I'm not as far as you, though. I'm only three gyms down. But there's a long trek between gyms two and three. And then now there's another long trek between three and four. So I just did the Ghost Tower. But I wasn't able to get all the way to the top. So then I had to trigger the Team Rocket sequence. And that's about where I'm at right now without saying too much of where I'm at. But honestly, because then it just ends up being battle, battle, battle. Like, you just battle all the NPCs over and over and over again. Like, that's kind of how I grind NPCs, by doing that and by walking the Pokemon in the Pokeball, because you get an insane amount of XP from that.
And you can avoid a lot of them, too. But, like, I don't know. You need it for XP, so, you know.
Yeah, that's how I get my XP, because I'm not really catching. So, anyway. That's enough said about Pokemon Let's Go. I think if you're a fan of the Pokemon series, you've probably already picked
it up. I just pick them up because anything that you pick up that's extra, the stuff you can trade them in to the professor.
For candy.
And for candy, and you can stat boost your Pokemon that way.
Yeah, I figure I can always go back and do that. Again, the walking Loki, you get...
I know.
I've gotten so much Charmander candy. I've probably like poured like 40 Charmander candies into my now Charmeleon. who I'm surprised is not a Charizard at this point, because the other two are Venusaur. Yeah, I know. I think it's just like one or two levels behind. But anyway. So anyhow, talking about some other things I played this week. Of course, I've been continuing on in Final Fantasy 14 because, you know, the festival kind of got me jazzed on that again. But I've also been playing World of Warcraft with my buddy Delvin. He has been helping me run through some mythics, and I'll plug his Twitch channel over at VG Realness, because sometimes I pop in on his Twitch channel over there we'll do some mythics. I've done some mythics with him and some other stuff. I've also been oddly getting back into PvP, which I didn't think was something I was into, but it's really fun on an Affliction Warlock for any of you that are into WoW. You will be very happy to know this, Loki. One other thing I did this week is I really spent some time with the VR playing some other games besides just Tetris Effect. Don't get me wrong. I played Tetris Effect because I wasn't able to do last week's event because I was in Vegas. I made sure to do the one this weekend. And I finally...
Oh, yeah, that's right. They have events.
Every Saturday. So, oops, you missed it. But during that time, you can play the 1989 skin too, which I think you unlock at some point anyway.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, but you're able to play it during the weekend. That 1989 skin is awesome. It's the old school like Game Boy Tetris, but they kind of like the song morphs as it does in other skins, and so it's like the chiptune version at first, and then it's just like totally like drum and bass, boom 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 boom, you know, like that whole thing, and it's really cool. And then when you get to the end of the stage, it's like fireworks, and it looks really great in VR. I loved it. So I've been playing a little bit of that, but I also went and I finally played some Rez in VR, which was great. I finally got to play Area X in VR, which is gorgeous, and obviously the song is great. It was a little short, but here I'm going to tell you why Area X bugs me, though. Like, I loved it, don't get me wrong, but didn't Area X totally feel like a proof of concept for like Rez 2?
Yeah.
Like, what? Because the weird thing is, when you launch Area X, it takes forever to load.
Because it's its own game.
It's its own thing. Yeah, it's its own like separate thing. It's not like they built a new area in the first game's engine. They made a new engine out of Unreal. If you read the credits, the Unreal engine is credited. So they made a brand new engine for Rez. They did that just for one area. I'm sorry, but that is a proof of concept of a new Rez game that I am being denied right now, and it makes
like,
me mad.
It's just like, you know, the home versions of DDR, where you get the, you know, the preview songs for the next mix.
They need to greenlight Rez 2, because that was awesome. I loved that, playing that was so cool. There's things that kind of are in Tetris Effect too. When you get enough of the power ups, your guy turns into the yoga kind of thing floating through, and that is the same thing you see in Tetris Effect when you're doing the relax modes. The little dude in the background does like the similar poses from Rez Area. I swear it's like the same thing. So I think there are subtle connections between the enhanced games universe game.
I think Tetris Effect is made in Unreal as well.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure a lot of the stuff, I wonder, they credit an engine, they call it something like the Synthasia engine. I wonder, Synthasia or something like that. I wonder if in the Tetris Effects credits, that same engine isn't credited. I would bet Tetris and Rez X are built on the same engine.
Probably.
I wonder if somebody in chat knows that over at live.vognetwork.com. Oh, Bobby Blackwolf confirms that Tetris Effect is made in Unreal. So there is that.
Yeah.
So, I wonder if it is the same engine. So anyway, I also played Thumper in VR. Which, that was that music game that's really hard. Yeah. They call it like the music horror game. And of course, obviously in VR, that's really cool. I had played that once before. I think Shane or somebody had brought their VR over, and I think I did play Thumper. But, you know, I got to kind of sit down with it a little more and play. That game is hard. I don't like calling that a music game,
that's
because
right.
I flopped
didn't
that
Beat
game.
Beat Saber
so hard.
Come out too?
It did, and I didn't get that yet, but I plan to. I just didn't get around to it this week, so... And I think that's about it. Oh, I did a quick stream of Metroid, like 8-bit Metroid, because if you set up a Japanese Switch account, which is very easy to do, you just do it online, you set your region in Japan, make a Japanese account, it's free, it doesn't cost anything. You can go on, if you use that account on your Switch, you can go on to the Japanese store and you can download the Famicom game collection, which for the most part is not a big deal. Because it's the same games. It's not like the classic NES and the classic Famicom have like different games. It's not like that on the Switch.
Yeah.
It's all the same games, except I didn't even realize this. Japanese got the SP Golf. What? how many of you are really playing that golf game, okay? So Japanese got the S special golf with everything unlocked. But here's the thing. Because it is based off the Famicom stuff, Metroid was a disc game on the Famicom. So when you play Metroid on the Famicom version, you get the thing that looks like The Legend of Zelda, where you have your save files to select from. There's loading times between some of the different zones because it's emulating the disc. But also remember the Famicom had that extra sound chip thing. So there are some subtle noise and sound differences. Like the ice beam makes a very different sound. Those little birds that fly down from the ceiling to try to get you, they make a very, very different noise as well. So I actually did a live stream to just look at some of those, just those little very, very subtle nuances. But that's the kind of shit I love. I love looking like at those subtle differences between what we got and what Japan got, because back then the hardware was kind of different.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I did a little stream of that, and I got to do some classic 8-bit Metroid. So.
Well, I was watching, I guess they did some an AGDQ type like impromptu thing during some sort of, I don't even know what it was, but like recently.
Hmm.
So I watched, someone did a randomizer with the Zelda Link to the Past Super Metroid randomizer.
But both games at once?
Yeah. So what it does is the way it does works is basically there's four points in Super Metroid that link to Link to the Past. So you go between the games as, you know, the characters and stuff, and the items from each are strewn about in the other games. Like all of, so you have some Link to the Past items that are in Link to the Past, and some are in.
Oh, that's badass. I want to play
in,
that.
Super Metroid.
That sounds like what the Nintendo Player Championships thing. You know how, like, the cart would more. Like, you get to a certain point in Rad Racer, and then you're playing Tetris, and then you're collecting coins in Mario Brothers and all that stuff. Like, remember how that cartridge would move between the games? That's kind of what it sounds like, but, like, cooler.
Yeah, but yeah, this keeps going. Like, so they had, what they had is they had two speedrunners doing it. One guy who was an expert at like Zelda, and the other one was more of an expert at Link to the Past, and they kept swapping.
You mean Zelda Metroid? You just said
Zelda Metroid. So they were kind of better suited at each one, and so they were kind of doing that, and like, you know, they'd find, oh hey, here's some arrows in Metroid, and here's. You know, here's the Faria's suit in Link to the Past. You know, it's neat. I don't know. It'd be fun to play.
Yeah, I want to play that. Where's that ROM? I want to check that out. That sounds
really
cool.
Probably find it online.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for our gaming weeks. So housekeeping, I'll just say follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/OLR. We're also on Facebook at Orange Lounge Radio. And follow the network over at Twitch TV, VOG Network, all one word. We will not be using the Orange Lounge Radio channel. We're going to be kind of combining our forces all to one place, the VOG Network channel. I'm not going to never say never to the Orange Lounge Radio Twitch channel, so you can follow that too, but... yeah, I'm going to be pointing people to the VOG Network channel. I know Bobby thinks y'all should wait to see some of the stuff he's got for the follows and all that stuff when we go live, but I want to get to that 50 follower count sooner rather than later, so there'll be hopefully more followers in the future too, so we'll see. But anyway, let's get to some other gaming news. Now, again, this week we are going to cover kind of 2 weeks worth of news because the news was a little lighter this week with it being Thanksgiving and all that. So we are going to cover things from across both weeks as opposed to doing like a cramming last week's news all into a 3-minute segment. We're going to kind of just
because
there's some big
holidays.
Like these first couple things that came up, there's some big things that happened while we were gone. We need to get into. So let's get into it, Loki.
Like the last few Steam sales. Steam Link has been marked down quite a bit. Now, I think they were selling it for $2.50. I got mine either free or for a dollar with a game at one point on here. But the reason why it's being marked down is because they are selling it out. They have declared that they're not making any more of the hardware. They're phasing it out. So you can get your hands on a Steam Link cheap and I think a Steam controller as well while supplies last. Apparently, it is sold out in Europe and almost sold out in the U.S. And once they're gone, they plan on continuing support for the existing hardware, but they're not going to be distributing any more of the standalone hardware. Instead, what they're going to be doing is using smartphones, tablets, and televisions to be able to use the Steam app to do the Steam Link stuff, which makes sense because, like, for example, my one streaming device I have has a Steam Link app in it, so I can use that if I wanted to the stream games, although I have a laptop, so it's kind of pointless. But I have it anyways just in case I wanted to. And my phone has that too. So I haven't actually tried that, but it'd be neat.
Yeah, I bought a Steam Link, and I bought them when they were still like probably $50. So I feel a little burned, but that's okay. I mean, you know, I got what I paid for, and I did. I like the controller a lot, and I did like the device, but I can't really put my finger. And this is the question I'm going to ask kind of to everybody here. Like, I don't know. Well, part one, are you surprised by this news?
No.
Okay, part two, why then? Why did Steam Link, why didn't it, I guess, succeed? I don't know.
I'm not surprised because they dropped support for like Steam boxes so quickly, and it makes sense that they would have dropped support for this. You know, it's just hardware doesn't, this doesn't seem to be a thing that people necessarily need. Like, you know, if you're going to be playing games on like a PC and stuff, most people are just hooking their PCs up to their TV, or they're hooking their, they're just playing on their PC. There's not really a big demand for playing a PC game, you know, on your TV and streaming it over, you know, the Wi-Fi to play the same thing. I guess it makes sense, like, if you had, like, in an office or something like that, but it's just, I think people are just so comfortable. Like, if you think about, like, someone's computer setup, like, they have a nice keyboard, they have a nice mouse, they have a nice gaming chair, possibly, that they're sitting in, nice monitors. Why would I leave that to go somewhere else unless you're like trying to do like a party game or something like that, you know, stream it over? It's just the use case is very limited. I think
that's kind of what it ended up being, as much of like a neat piece of technology as it was. I think also it was kind of lacking in not, and not everybody's going to agree with this, but I think they were really lacked in not having a Netflix app, a Hulu app, so it could compete on the level with like Roku boxes and stuff. So that way, if you were looking at a Steam Link, it's like, oh, well, this one not only will do Netflix, Hulu, but this one will play all my PC games too. So this is the better value.
Exactly. That would have been ideal. But it's like, it just better. Like the whole Steam Box idea, it's kind of a half-baked idea, and they just didn't really implement it too well. They kind of stopped two-thirds of the way, if you will.
Looking at chat at live.vognetwork.com, VidPower says, best thing about Steam Link is you can minimize it and use your PC on your TV. And Bobby Blackwolf says, yeah, I use Steam Link to watch streaming services that don't have a console app. Bobby Blackwolf also says, I think now they just want to get a Steam Link app on your Roku. And I think he's right. I think that's where it's headed now, because aren't there already televisions that have the Steam thing built in?
Well, the Android TV has the Steam Link app.
Yeah,
so I have that for my Android TV that I've got. I don't believe my Roku has a Steam Link app.
Yeah, and just to be clear, like Bobby Blackwolf was saying, this is an example. This is
right,
Steam
right.
wants to be. That is not, and just, yeah, because somebody in chat asked, oh, there's a Steam. No, not yet. But this is just kind of the progression.
Right, yeah, because I think I would have looked at that. I would have put it on there if they had that. But no, they didn't have that. But hey, my TV that doesn't have, you know, Android TV that has a Steam Link app, I guess I could just hook my Steam Link up to that if I really wanted to. I don't, though, because I don't even know where it. No, I do know where it is. It's in the same place that my PlayStation TV is.
You know what also ruins Steam Link for me? The game, the first game I tried to play on my TV was that Tron Run R. That was the name of it. So you remember that game?
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing about that game, level like 4 would freeze on my computer and I couldn't get past it because of some weird thing with my video card. So even when I was using the Steam Link, I could never get past that part in the game. So it's like in my mind, you just kind of associate that mental thing. It's like, you know, if you, let's say, eat at Taco Bell and it makes you really sick, you're probably not going to eat Taco Bell again for a long time. That's like the kind of response, the Pavlov's response that I got with my Steam Link, is that Steam Link's just crashing my computer.
Unless you know you do
whether like, it's rational or not, that's
do
what
like
happened.
I do, where we haven't gone out to eat in a certain place in a long time, and so then we go back out there and we're like, oh yeah, that's why we don't come here anymore. And then you do that again a few years later because you forget why you stopped coming someplace. It's, I don't know.
All right. So, RIP Steam Link, I guess. That's that. All right. Let's move on and talk about, this is I think, kind of a big deal that came out the week we were off. And I was like, well, it's a bummer we didn't have a show this weekend. So we'll talk about it now. I'm sure as many of you have heard by now, the announcement came out that Sony Interactive Entertainment will not be participating with E3 in the year 2019. So next year, they will be skipping E3. In a statement that the company gave to Game Informer, they said, As the industry evolves, Sony Interactive Entertainment continues to look for inventive opportunities to engage the community. PlayStation fans mean the world to us, and we always want to innovate, think differently, and experiment with new ways to delight gamers. As a result, we have decided not to participate in E3 2019. We are exploring new and familiar ways to engage our community in 2019 and can't wait to share our plans with you. And so some people wondering, well, what does this mean for, like, are they going to do what EA does? And EA doesn't participate in E3, but they're, like, across the street at the same time doing their own shit, right? Well, Sony clarified. Senior Vice President of Communications Jennifer Clark said, we will not activate or hold a press conference around E3. So Sony, not going to be in LA in June.
That was the perfect time to announce your next-gen system, Microsoft.
Which could very well happen. Just so you know, in a related story, I'm sure people were contacting right away. Nintendo and Microsoft were contacted right away about E3. Both have confirmed they will be at E3. Phil Spencer actually wrote a tweet. A lot to share with fans at E3 2019. Always a high point of the year to witness the industry's creativity and the energy of the community. The official Xbox account saying, we can't wait to see you at E3 2019. Reggie Fils-Aimé saying, E3 is an outstanding opportunity for us to share new games and experiences with the fans and business partners from around the globe. And that's a statement that E3 actually put out. So those two companies will still be there.
I think the thought, it seems like the general consensus is that Sony's just kind of resting high on their laurels and they're just like, yeah, we don't fucking need you guys. And so I don't know if they have anything to show, because I think
it's more column B. I don't think it's necessarily Sony being crass, which is, you know, gamers oftentimes want to knee-jerk react to take it to a negative space.
Because
I think that's the reality, is that Sony doesn't have anything they really, or the stuff they're going to show is the stuff they've already shown, and they're going to get red for it. Because Last of Us 2 still isn't out, and have they dated that yet? This is probably next holiday. So
yeah, Last of Us 2, there's still Death Stranding.
Death Stranding's probably
next
holiday.
The other zombie game that they're supposed to be coming, Days Gone, or is that what it is?
Days Gone. I think they did Days Gone finally, because it got pushed back. That was one of the stories.
The Samurai game that they had coming.
So I kind of think if they were to have E3, they'd probably be rehashing a bit. I mean, maybe that Final Fantasy VII remake someday. I don't know. So I think I can sort of see that maybe Sony's just like, you know, we don't have a lot to show this year because we're setting up for the next year. But there is that, I'm going to be honest, there's that cynical side of me as well, too, that's like, I don't think it's so much Sony being on a high horse, but I seem to remember after, we all remember the infamous E3 when the PlayStation 3 was unveiled. Giant enemy crabs, $599, right? All those sound bites that came back to haunt Sony. I seem to remember Sony threatened to pull out that year, too. They didn't, but they almost did. And I seem to recall this last year wasn't like superbly well received at the press conference at Sony. I mean,
no, because they...
it wasn't like the games weren't like a problem or anything. I think people were generally excited about like Spider-Man stuff, but I think people were just like, oh, why are we standing in this barn and then going to this thing? And it got like a lot of like crap online. And so I think honestly, Loki, you, me, Jamie, Bobby Blackwolf, we us all sat down 4 years ago or so and kind of asked ourselves, is it really worth it for us to go to E3 anymore? Are we getting value out of E3 anymore?
No.
And honestly, somebody at Sony in a boardroom probably asked that same question. Like, we paid all this money for this to get this online. Why are we doing E3? I think somebody asked that very hard question.
But then again, like, you're the one that made the choice to hold your little video thing in a barn with like a musical guest and stuff. And yes, I get it. The guy is like, he's good. He's a good musical guest, but is it really necessary to do that? Couldn't you just show a trailer and be done with it? I mean, like, who? I don't know. I just think it.
Let me get to some of the comments in our chat. Live.vognetwork.com. SSGO100 Matt says, I think Sony's recent moves, decision not to do a PlayStation Experience show, remember that's a thing too, and skipping E3 seem to indicate that they're going to go all out in 2020. Sony cited that they don't have enough console exclusive and things in development not announced to warrant doing either show entirely. This leads me to believe they are going to rely on major game ports, the handful of games they are releasing in 2019, and even the PlayStation 1 Classic. And let's not forget third party. I'm adding to that. Third party is hugely important in that too.
That PlayStation 1 Classic, I have very low expectations for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Also, comments in chat. YYR in chat says, remember the last 1 to 2 years of the 360? Microsoft had nothing. PlayStation 3 delivered and caught up. I wonder if the opposite might happen now. Slightly different dynamic, YYR, to PlayStation 3, and I'm using my quotey fingers, catching up. PlayStation always kind of had the advantage in Japan too, which Microsoft, even with the 360, was never really able to do. And I don't really see them breaking through that Japan wall with Xbox One either. Potentially their next system. I think the biggest bombshell in the world would be Microsoft announcing they've acquired a Japanese studio amongst all these studio acquisitions they're doing. But we're all waiting on that. Maybe that'll be the bombshell they drop next E3. I don't know. I'm fan wanking. I'm making shit up. But I mean, that would really turn heads. That if Microsoft is going to put some more focus back on Japan, but certainly Microsoft could certainly use this opportunity. Absolutely. But you know, Sony is probably loading the guns with exclusives for the inevitable PlayStation 5. That seems more and more likely for 2020. As whatever Microsoft is probably doing next is probably 2020, unless. I don't know. They did kind of tease it a little bit at this last year. Maybe they are going to do it in 2019. Maybe they're going to try to get a year jump on it like they did with the 360. They may not announce it at E3 because Xbox One and PlayStation 4 were not unveiled at E3. They were done at separate events. So who knows? So many things could happen. But what we do know, Microsoft is starting. They're moving the chess pieces, right? They have acquired all of these studios. Why? Exclusives. What? Next Xbox. So I fully expect that next Xbox gets announced, and I think probably in 2020 to give these games time to cook and so forth, so that they can say, we've got this exclusive, this exclusive, this exclusive, this exclusive.
And don't worry, Crackdown is coming out in
2020.
Next year. You know, just right around the corner. It's like,
But Sony, I think, is in a position where they're positioning themselves for a similar thing. They're basically taking an entire year off and relying on third parties, relying on indies and that stuff, so that they can also navigate and get lined up for 2020 and have this, and this ready to go in response to what Microsoft's going to do. 2020 is going to be an exciting year. You know, honestly, in my opinion, Microsoft's not the one that stands to gain from this scenario. You know who's really going to gain from this scenario? Everybody's favorite number two, Nintendo. Nintendo is going to be clean slate next year. They're going to put out the new Animal Crossing game. Probably Metroid Prime 4 happens next year. If they wanted to redo the Switch and do a Super Switch or a Switch XL, whatever the fuck they want to do, next year's the year to do it. Like, Nintendo has a clear path next year. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with it, since they don't compete with Microsoft and Sony after all. So next year's all them. Well, I shouldn't say that, because, you know, we will have Death Stranding. Last of Us 2, I'm sure, is going to be amazing. Microsoft, it's not like they're taking the year off. They have their own stuff
to
do.
Yeah, they don't compete unless they're winning. Yeah. That's like my kids. Like, well, I wasn't racing anyway, so it doesn't matter that I came in second. Yeah, I'm sure they're like, oh, yeah, we're not competing with those guys when they're down in the numbers. But then, like, oh, yeah, our console is the most number, you know, it sold the most units out of all of them. We're great, but we're not competing.
YYR in chat says, yeah, Xbox One isn't catching all the way up, but they can build momentum for the next generation. I think that's a very interesting way to look at it, momentum. And I'll be very curious to see what Sony does to kind of bridge the gap. Are they going to go the Nintendo route and do more directs? Like, obviously Sony doesn't do a direct, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, when they did their E3 thing this last time, they had the press conferences happening in the barn and that stadium thing. What did they fill in the interim with during E3? Their team that does all that, their blog cast people that do all the online content. So what's to say these guys don't put together little special TV shows and, you know, online TV shows and things that are akin to Nintendo's directs? And that's how Sony puts news out in the next year. Who knows? So we'll see. Next year's going to be very interesting for momentum. Let me ask one more question for everybody. Let's take the focus off Sony a little bit, and let's put the focus on E3 itself. Is E3 dead? Does this just prove that E3 is dead? Yes or no, support your
answer.
Well,
E3 hasn't really necessarily been E3 for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
elaborate,
kinda,
please.
It's just kind of morphing into its own thing because, you know, this is like its final or one of the pieces to transition back into E4All type of thing.
Damn you, because that's exactly where I was going. It's like, now we're going to get the show that E4All was supposed to be. E3 has been slowly morphing into the show that E4All was supposed to be.
But now no one's going to care because E4All is just basically PAX, but PAX is better, so, you know.
Well, but is PAX better than what E3 is going to put out? Like, let's analyze that for a moment. If E3 now views its competition as PAX, which I'm not necessarily saying is true, I realize E3 is still a trade show. PAX is still a fan
show. Just go to Gamescom.
But one of your biggest fucking trade companies just backed out of the show. So would E3 be smarter to reposition itself and embrace this fan thing more than they've already been doing in the past couple of years? You know? Maybe E3, the trade show, is dying. We'll say that. I won't say the finality of is dead, but is dying. E3, the fan show, is growing. You know, obviously, they're not going to bring that name E4All back because everybody's going to associate that with a conference that didn't work. But, I mean, a lot of those same kind of things that E4All was going for, isn't that kind of what E3 is like slowly turning into away from a trade show and competing with something like PAX? And I'm sorry, but PAX hasn't been good since 2010, in my opinion. So, is it better than PAX? Maybe.
I don't know. But I don't know. It's, I don't have any, like I never feel like, even nowadays, like, oh man, I really wish I had gone to E3 this year. I don't feel that at all anymore.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I like how video games are one of the only industries where the consumers won't allow an industry trade show to exist without them being a part of it. Do movies do this too? I feel like in a way, because all of it shows up on the internet, but maybe not.
Well, movies, I don't even know if they have really any trade shows perhaps. But
Cinema West or whatever that thing's called. I don't, where they show all the new trailers. It was in Vegas this past year. There, I feel like there's a couple, but yeah, I get what you mean.
I don't know, but like, I know there's like a lot of stuff takes place during like Comic Cons nowadays, it seems like.
VidPower in chat says E3's brand name is still important as non-gamers only know of E3 and probably don't know of other gaming conventions like PAX. Interesting. The name recognition. E3 is the type of thing that tends to get covered in newspapers, on news channels, for general people, not just necessarily a gamer audience. Dr. Tetsuya in chat says, does D23 count? Though that's Disney exclusively, I think. Well, but think of all the things Disney's been snapping up lately. Disney's Marvel now, so that is included at D23. Disney Star Wars, the latest Star Wars trailers show up at D23. Disney is ABC, so yes, D23 is Disney, but Disney is much more than just cartoons in Disneyland at this point. Disney is a big empire. So, Bobby Blackwolf says, I think the thing that caused E3 to decline was making it not just a trade show. I think in a way, yes, but I think with virtual conferencing and virtual technology being bigger and bigger, and the fact that we do get more of our stuff across the internet, and that, you know, YouTube's deliver all the same information, we're doing conferences across video and working from home and all this stuff that we didn't do 10 years ago nearly as much, I kind of think that all plays into it. I think a lot of trade happens virtually. Like, you just don't have to take a trip out to LA anymore to see stuff. That's the thing. Anyway, all right, let's move on. We could probably spend a whole 3 hours on this topic, but we do have other things we want to cover, so let's move on. Loki.
So No Man's Sky rolled out with another patch over the last week here. So they had this new free patch called Visions, and it added some new stuff to the game, including new biomes. They had some creatures in outer space, more palette variety in the planets. They had new fauna in the game. Lots of new tweaks that make kind of the game look better. New base parts. Man, I really need to go back to this game. But it's free. And it's continuing to update, making the game even better than it was before. Which we could say the same about Fallout 76. But maybe that will follow in the same path and, you know.
You know what? Despite
50 gigabyte update at a time.
Despite all the shit that Hello Games has got over the years for No Man's Sky, like, you got to hand it to them that they are still pouring in the effort to continue to improve and evolve this game. It's pretty rad.
I feel less bad about them doing it because, or like the situation with them, because they had a smaller team behind it, whereas Bethesda was like, you know, hey, we got our Fallout team and we got some id team
and we got
these other guys doing it. We have these other guys doing it. We have all these people from Bethesda like putting it together. It's like, this is what you came up with.
And I think you're right. A lot of people have said that some of these issues with No Man's Sky and what the internet made it out to be was that you had a, you know, indie developer being treated like a company.
Very ambitious idea, whereas multiplayer Fallout 4 Recycled, not so ambitious.
Yeah.
But hey, check it out. It's free if you have the game, so why not?
Why not? And I bet a lot of people probably pick that up on sale at some point or something. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They saw the fall sale, and hey, tomorrow is Cyber Monday. So.
Did you get suckered into buying anything from any of these Black Friday, Cyber Monday sales, Steam sales going on? Nintendo had a big sale.
I was tempted to buy games on the Switch for my kids, but I can't really – all of them were digital, so I don't really want to do that because I need to give it to them for Christmas, and I just haven't been able to – order that stuff. I'm waiting till tomorrow to see what I can pick up for them because they want to get, like, you know, all the popular game. Oh my god, so like, speaking of sort of video games, I went and saw Wreck-It Ralph 2 this weekend.
Oh, how was it? I want to go see
it. It was fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait.
So it's great. They have a game in the, you saw it in the trailer called Slaughter Race, which is basically Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. But there's like, they're talking about, like, you know, this YouTube type thing, you know, that they're trying to get him lots of views and likes and stuff so that he gets money to order this part or whatever. And so they're talking about, like, the different things that are popular and stuff. And, of course, there was, like, literally a two-second clip of Fortnite. And all the fucking kids in the entire theater, including my own son, it's like, oh, my God, Fortnite! You know, it's just, it's like, oh, my God, did you see that Fortnite? Oh, my God! And, you know, so it's the game of the week. But, like, so, yeah, he wants, like, stuff. You know, like, they want to get Hello Neighbor, which is, you know, the popular, like, kind of, you know, not babies first, but kids first horror game, you know, type thing.
Babies first horror game. I thought that was like Five Nights at Freddy's, because those games aren't really violent.
That too. And, like, he's wanted me to give him Five Nights at Freddy's, and I'm like, you know, Custom Night's free. You just play that for free. And Bendy and the Ink Machine, you know, it's also another horror game. Very much in the horror games. And then, of course, Robux. He wants me to give him some, like, in-game currency for that game.
Oh, boy.
They have so much garbage on there. But, oh, my God.
I want it all the time.
But, yeah, my youngest son, my, like, four-year-old, wants Hello Neighbor.
I don't even know that game. That's funny.
Hello Neighbor, it's about... I don't even know necessarily the premise of the game. I know that you basically break into this guy's house next door. And
something you should teach your kids to do.
It's like this giant weird house, and you're just trying to find out what's, like, going on over there. Like, I don't know if he's murdering kids or something, but, like, something.
What? Don't buy that for children.
It's an E10 game. It's fine. He's probably not actually murdering kids, or if it's, you know, it's not super violent.
It's just catch up.
It's E10, but, like, apparently you're trying to, like, sneak around his house, and he sets traps and stuff like that. And so I don't know what the premise is. It's just teaching you about burglarizing people's houses, I guess. But.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that, and then they had, like, the Lego games.
Sia Tabiri says kidnapping. Hello Neighbor is giant puzzle stealth. Bobby Blackwolf suggests Night Trap for babies.
Night Trap for babies. Night Twap.
All right, let's. I hate it. All right, let's move on. We were talking about big developers, big teams developing things. Still chatter about Diablo and the mess that happened.
People are still angry.
Still stuff about this. Not so much about Diablo Immortal at this point, but talk about people coming out of the woodwork, you know, anonymous tipsters and things like that, talking about Diablo 4 that's been in development and what it is. And apparently part of the reason why they weren't ready to announce it yet is that the game has gone through some changes. Apparently the first version of Diablo, according to reports online, Kotaku did this whole, you know, expose on it, and I think other websites have kind of, you know, piggybacked on it. Apparently there was a Diablo project under work. It was called Hades. It was basically Blizzard's version of Dark Souls, but it was in the Diablo universe. It was a mainline Diablo project that was headed up by Josh Mosquera, who did Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls, who has since left Blizzard, although obviously they never talk about why. Did he do it to go do a new company? Did he do it because of this? I don't know. But anyway, it would have been, they say, a gothic challenging dungeon crawler. It was Diablo's take on Dark Souls. Apparently, this was going to be an over-the-shoulder third-person perspective. They may not have ended up calling it Diablo 4. It was so different. But that's kind of where it started as. As a Diablo fan, I think this sounds terrible. But I bet my husband would be super into it because he loves Dark Souls. And he also has played a lot of Diablo 3. So this is probably up his alley. But I'm all about loot, 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 loot. I don't care about like super hard mode. But that's what maybe it wasn't that. I mean, we hear Dark Souls and that's a certain type of, oh, you died, you died, you died, right? And maybe Blizzard was not going to really do it that same way.
What is it with Activision and trying to copy everybody? I mean, like, I understand this is Blizzard, but it's still Activision. And it's like you have a game formula that's
popular.
Blizzard
is fucking good at it. Look at what they did with Overwatch, Team Fortress 2. Look what they did with the Heroes of the Storm, League of Legends. Look what they did with they don't bring it to you every time, Loki.
Yeah, but look what they did with Diablo.
Diablo 3 is great now.
Yeah, but
Diablo 2
Immortal,
is a classic. Okay, but that's a whole nother reason. That is a game made for China that should have never been on the main stage at BlizzCon. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It was the messaging. If the messaging had been different on that game, nobody would give a shit. The problem was it was the big announcement at a convention people paid $150 to go to. They should have kept it a sideshow, and they should have let the Warcraft 3 remaster have the spotlight. It would have been fine. But anyway, we already talked about that. So let's see. This was canceled. Apparently, there was also a planned second expansion for Diablo 3 that was canceled, and that pisses me off because that game deserved a second expansion. I would love to see what they'd... I feel like now the Necromancer thing feels even more half-assed, knowing that there was supposed to be a second expansion at some point.
Well, that's okay. The second expansion will just be a part of like pre-ordered DLC or something.
Well, there is no second expansion now.
Well, I mean, it'll be just rolled into whatever next game it is.
Yeah. So anyway, apparently there is still a Diablo project that's in the works. It's being headed up by what's left of the Diablo 3 team, Team 3, and it's going to be another mainline entry in the series, but it's still very early on, and even the camera perspective may still change to what they had on this Project Hades. So Diablo 4 still a long ways out, and that is ultimately probably why Blizzard chose not to even show us a logo at this time and make the decisions they did. I would love to know why the second expansion got canceled. That's the answer I want. Why did Diablo 3's second expansion get canceled? And that's not really being... Because it sounds like people inside Blizzard were very surprised to hear it was canceled as well. So, interesting.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase TWIG.
Anyhow, let's move on. We have just a couple more stories before we get to the classic game of the week. Loki.
So there's been rumors that there's going to be a new version of the Switch coming out at some point soon. And now that's kind of backed up a little bit by this consumer service video that Nintendo's put out called How to Prepare a Nintendo Switch for Trade-In or Sale. So basically telling you how you are supposed to, like, you know, back up your data to the cloud, of course, if you're a Switch Online user, do a system transfer, link your accounts, and then erase your data. And then also unlinking your account if you forget to delete anything before trading it in. I'm sure they're going to say, well, it's because, you know, we're talking about, you know, trading in if you want one of the Pikachu version Switch.
The Diablo 3 Switch. Isn't there a Smash Brothers one, too?
Yeah, Smash Brothers or something like that. But, like, I don't know. I don't see people doing that necessarily. Like they would, well, maybe Shane, but you know, most people would not do that. It's a lot more money than like a 3DS, you know, or a 2DS.
Yeah.
Or DS.
Can't you just get stickers to put back on the existing Switch?
You can. You can get like just skins and stuff. And who gives a shit? It's just a fucking skin. No one cares.
It's a collectible. I mean, some people, my mother loved to collect these goblets from the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo. You remember the Madonna Inn with the themed rooms and all that stuff? For some reason, she loved these goblets. She collected the goblets. And we just like, they're just drink cups. I mean, they're really pretty, but that's it. It's, you know what? People collect things that they like. Collectors.
But the thought the thought process is, well, maybe it's getting ready for people to trade in their system for a newer Switch version or something. So maybe that's going to be a thing.
Mm.
But I guess we'll have to wait and see, because they haven't announced anything. But it seems to be that's kind of the rumors kind of going that way.
How would you feel if they did do a Switch? I still feel like it's too early for one. I'm only going to support it if they don't start locking shit out like they did with the new 3DS. I'm going to be pissed if there's a Switch upgrade that suddenly starts locking things out, because it's only been like 2 years. It's too soon for us to get a new console that's like, oh, it's got all these exclusives on it.
Don't worry, we're not going to do that, and then we do that, you know.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm scared
of. I just don't understand what they would be. I mean, I guess upgrade the screen. But the screen's fine. It looks nice on the 720 screen. I mean, I don't think we really need to increase the resolution or anything. Battery life, is that an issue?
More power. More graphical oomph. More chips. More RAMs. More memories.
Put more onboard
hard drive
storage.
More onboard storage.
It would be nice, because 32 gigs is ridiculous. But I don't really see. I don't know. I don't think it's necessary.
Well, we'll see. Nintendo's just got to tell us.
I would like another Switch just so I have one that the kids don't fuck up. I forgot to mention.
They can have the old one.
So here's what I do. You know, because they have fucked up, you know, my red and blue Joy-Cons. So I have a set of, you know, Splatoon ones. I have the green and purple. Or not green, purple. Green and pink. And so I have those sitting charging all the time. And then when I go and play the system, I just take the crappy Joy-Cons off and I put the nice untouched Joy-Cons on there, and I play my games with that. And then, of course, I put the crappy ones back on when the kids play with it, because I don't know what the fuck they did to that analog stick, but it's fucked. It is all sorts of, like, I don't know, maybe if there's, like, crap or, like, dust or something underneath it, but it drifts, like, I've tried fixing that thing, but it's drifting all over the fucking place.
They threw it in the bathtub when you weren't looking.
They didn't throw it in the bathtub, but it's, I think it may be dust, but I don't understand how that thing would be affected by dust so quickly. We've only had it since April. I mean, it's not been that long, and it's only the left stick for some reason. And I've tried, like, cleaning it out, like, blowing
Aren't children a blessing?
I don't even know if it's children. I've seen people complain online that these things break pretty fast.
Okay, so. Yeah, Dark Tetsuya in chat says, my Joy-Con is doing that, too.
So it's just some shit on however they design it, you know, cheaply or whatever, so I don't know.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. Well, before we get to the classic game of the week, one way that, you know, people are getting in trouble for getting their classic games out is by running ROM websites. And while we were out, you may remember Nintendo had filed actual lawsuits against the websites Love ROMs and Love Retro. Well, apparently they've reached an agreement, and there is a $12 million judgment. Love ROM and Love Retro will be paying Nintendo a $12 million judgment. How do they have $12 million? Does that just mean, like, their paychecks are going to be garnished for the rest of their lives? Because where are they going to come up with $12 million? Like, Loki, if you got sued for $12 million, how would you pay it?
Oh, bankruptcy.
I guess. Maybe that's what they plan to do. I don't know.
I mean, hopefully, if they're running a website like that, they had it running under a LLC or something like that, so that they're not liable for damages.
I don't think so, because the defendants in this admit that their involvement with the websites constituted direct and indirect copyright and trademark infringement, which caused Nintendo irreparable injury. Plaintiff is hereby awarded judgment against all defendants jointly and severally in the amount of $12,230,000. I'm sorry, it's actually $12.2 million.
Oh. Speaking of lawsuits, I got my $10 check from the whole PlayStation 3 other OS lawsuit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I forgot that was even coming. I didn't even, like...
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I was like, woohoo, $10. I'll spend this in one place.
Also interesting, they were required to sign over the ownership of Love ROMs and Love Retro to Nintendo. So wouldn't that be hilarious if Nintendo started using the Love Retro name? We own this now. Please give it up for our Love Retro collection coming out. That would be such an asshole thing to do, but I could see it happening. That's great. That is a pretty good name to have, Love Retro. So who knows? Just have loveretro.com redirect to a website on Switch Online. I get it.
You know, piracy is bad and stuff like that, but $12 million damage, please. I think that's a bit much.
All right. Also, hey, if you are downloading ROMs, especially of the new stuff, be careful because Pokemon Let's Go, I mean, there is a ROM out there floating around on the internet, but there's a fake one, a Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu ROM that will brick your console if you try to use it. It is a more sinister version of the game, which you shouldn't be pirating the new stuff anyway. So, you know, I probably really shouldn't even say this, but it is interesting that people are kind of coming up with these kind of countermeasures to some of the piracy.
So Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu uses Brick Break, and it was very, very effective. I can make those Pokemon puns
Fuck
now
off.
Because I played the game. I'm aware of all this stuff.
Let's go back to a more classic time when the Pokemon that we sought out was missing. No, we're going to take a step back with the classic game of the week. And so, as usual, we take a trip down memory lane through radio magic and the use of Skype to say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers with us on the line. Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am okay. How are you?
Good. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
It was pretty good. It was nice and chill, which is what I was hoping for.
All right, but literally chill because you guys are up in Tahoe, right?
Yes, it was snowing. There was snow on the beach, which was actually kind of weird for me, but very cool.
Snow in California? Get out.
We have high elevations here.
It does. It has been known to happen. Anyway, it's the classic game of the week time. Every week, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and says, hey, this game, you should be thankful for this. Dark Sakura picked this is an interesting one because it's like it's a modern take on a classic game, but it does qualify under the 10 years or older criteria, believe it or not, right?
That it does, because it came out in September of 2008.
There it is. So it's this is one of those feel old yet type of games, because it is 10 years old this year. What is the classic game of the week?
Mega Man 9.
Mega Man 9. They were using chiptunes in Mega Man 9, but this is on the 360 and the Wii.
Yep, there's more to this.
Okay.
So it was developed by Capcom and MT Create, and it is the first original Mega Man series game since Mega Man 8 and Mega Man and Bass, or Rockman and Forte, that came out about a decade before this one. It is also the first game in the series to not have a truly physical first release. It was downloadable using WiiWare and PlayStation Network and Xbox Live Arcade. It was announced in June 2017 that it would have a physical release with the release of Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 for PS4, Xbox One, and PC, and the digital version that came out on the Switch in 2018 in May. So, basically, it continues the adventures of Mega Man, or Rockman. And so, Dr. Light is blamed for Dr. Wily's evil. Da, da, da. And so, Mega Man goes in to stop the robots to prove his creator's innocence. And to show that it's Wily who's the bad guy. So, it is old-school 2D platforming Mega Man action. It was developed for modern consoles, but was required to go in an 8-bit and visual and audio style like the NES. Inafune Kenji, and Takeshita Hironobu, who were the development team behind both. They were the producers, but they instructed the development team to stick to the likeness and style of Mega Man 2, which came out in 1988. And it was a pretty big success, and it prompted them to also come out with Mega Man 10 soon after. So this was also something that took place in year 20XX, and it is also the first game that had a female robot master. This was the game that Flash Woman showed up in. And of course, in the robot order that you're supposed to fight in, you know, or the advised robot order, she's the first on the list. So, I guess her weapon is even as versatile. as I was saying, it did follow the style visually and audio for Mega Man 2. That was used as the benchmark for it. It also did have downloadable content for the game that one of them would allow you to play as Proto Man, which he can slide, charge his blaster, and take double the damage of Mega Man. You also could get higher difficulty, an endless stage, and a new special boss called Fake Man. So, the later release that came out in Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, instead of it being DLC, you had secret codes that would allow you to unlock the DLC content. As I said, it was developed by Capcom and NT-Create. NT-Create had developed Mega Man Zero and Mega Man ZX spin-offs and had previous Capcom team members who had worked on other Mega Man games. The first six games in the original Mega Man series were made for NES. There were a bunch of spin-offs, of course, like Mega Man 8. And then the Mega Man 8 and Rockman and Forte were brought out on other home consoles later. But Inafune was, of course, down to create, something that was a throwback to the superior old school, but that its creation would highly depend on the input of fans, and that was a quote from him. He said that the simple fun of a Mega Man game does not fit into the grandiose, expansive world of the consumer gaming industry has become, so you have to make games that match the current expectations. And so he really wanted to go back to how it was supposed to be. And the rise of retro gaming, especially on services like Virtual Console, basically made Mega Man 9 possible. People wanted the old school. The audio was composed by Yamada Ippo, Kawakami Yo, Shimoto Yu, and Isogai Hiroki. They were all people who had big input, and some of them are actually veteran composers like Yamada. He had been a composer for Capcom and worked with what he called a series of a sense of nostalgia. And that Shimoda Yu actually analyzed the audio of the NES Mega Man game so that he could be as authentic to it as possible. As I said, it came out in 2008. It was fully announced as Mega Man 9 in July 2008. And the details were announced in a weekly Famitsu and Nintendo Power. It was supposed to be exclusive to WiiWare, but there, of course, after prompting from the fans, they brought out Xbox Live Arcade and PSN copies. There also were mobile phone incarnations that were released in Japan in late 2010. Promotional artwork for it was done by I Am 8-Bit. It was supposed to be reminiscent of the really bad art we got here in the U.S. So the marketing campaign was meant to reflect that. And it also was put out with, you could get like a custom box that had that artwork on it and everything. It was pretty crazy. And then they did, for other promotional stuff, there was the Ski Tank energy drinks and two CD soundtracks. And that came out also in September 2008. It was pretty well received. Everyone was super happy. They did not release the financial figures, but said that they were cautiously optimistic about its performance on WiiWare and on the other consoles. And actually, it got pretty decent ratings, except by like one UK group called OPM, but they don't count.
Who cares what they think?
There was an Arcade Comics series, and the series did go on hiatus before it could do the full storyline, but they did release Splash Woman and Concrete Man early in the series, and then there was another new character in the series called Vesper Woman, but I don't recall if she ever made it into one of the games. And that was it. That's Mega Man 9.
You know, it's interesting that you say the Splash Woman is the one that you're supposed to fight first, because I noticed in this long play that we're using to get the background music, they also took on Splash Woman first, which you might have heard the background music there. But I think this is one of those games where there's kind of multiple paths through, because I seem to remember Galaxy Man was the one that I was told to start with. Not Splash Woman. That was towards the end. But, you know, in Mega Man 2, I know some people would start with Metal Man. Some people would start with Flash Man. So it's probably one of those games where there's, you know, multiple ways through it, just depending on who you're there's probably a certain loop through it, but it's all about who are you most comfortable taking on with just the arm cannon, you know?
Well, and two, how's the biggest weakness to who? I always did start with Mega Man first because his weapon was most versatile.
You mean Metal Man?
Sorry, I started with Metal Man first.
Yeah.
Because he was in two, because he was the most versatile. But, like, everyone's got their own weakness. Like, Splash Woman's primary weakness is the Hornet Chaser from Hornet Man.
Yeah.
Concrete Man's weakness is the Laser Trident. But Splash Woman is also secondarily weak to the Mega Buster.
Oh, interesting.
Whereas other ones are not necessarily weak to those other... to the Mega Buster, although it will work.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I swear there was a path in 2 where you could start with Metal Man, was kind of a common one, but you could do Flash Man, then you go Flash Man to Quick Man, and use the Time Stopper on Quick Man, and it saps like a third of his health, but that means you have to kill the rest of them with the Buster. It's not quite as easy. But once you kind of get past that, the rest of it's cake.
Well, I always did Quick Man pretty much last, because I would... I never liked his stage, first of all.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good at it. There were some that would tell you to start off with, you know, Airman, which I was always like, why? But my first three, I would always do Metal Man first, and then I would switch between either doing Flash Man or Crash Man first.
Yeah. I like the ones that have a little more versatility. So anyway, I didn't mean to make a Mega Man 9 discussion about Mega Man 2, but, I mean, since...
But it was put after it, you know?
Yeah, this game was meant to evoke the feeling of, you know, when Mega Man was at its, you know, peak for most people, which was arguably Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3, I think a lot. I mean, you're going to get some Mega Man fans that are like, but I love 5. 4 is the best, you know, and that's fine. But I think generally it was probably at its peak with Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3 for most people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mega Man 2, just amongst most of the people I know, is, I would say, fairly considered to be the pinnacle of the series, and the rest were all really good, but Mega Man 2 is usually the one people have the biggest fondest memories of.
Yeah, and then there's so much of 2 in 3, because you go back and you fight all the 2 bosses in 3, that, like, it's hard to ignore that 3 in some ways feels like the superior game, but I'm not going to start that argument. That's probably already going in our chat room, but anyway, we got to get back to the show. But there
for
it is,
sure,
your classic
sure.
game. Your classic game of the week, Mega Man 9, which, believe it or not, is 10 years old, even though it feels a lot older. But maybe some people experiencing it relatively recently due to the Mega Man Collection Part 2 that had like 7, 8, 9, and 10 all in one collection. I know some people get into it that way. So anyway, Dark Sakura, we look forward to having you back in studio soon, hopefully before the year is out. And we might be on our Twitch thing. I think we only got about one or two more Shoutcast shows in us, then we're going to make that big transition. So it's going to be fun.
We'll see what happens. But right. Yeah, for now, though, I mean, I have to save up some time off and see if I can.
All right. Well, glad you had a good Thanksgiving, Dark Sakura, and we'll talk to you next time. Any parting words for our listeners tonight before we go back to the live show?
Coffee is wonderful.
Coffee is wonderful. I just had a cup before the show. Hey, we're back live with Orange Lounge Radio continuing on here. Episode number 753 for this, November the 25th of 2018. Loki joining me here in studio. Of course. Hello, Loki.
Hello.
What were you doing? Were you playing a game over there during the break? I thought you were Pokemon Going, weren't you?
I was doing Pokemon Go stuff, and then I was putting my calories for today.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. You're still doing really good on all that health stuff. Good for you.
Yeah, this weekend I haven't really been paying attention to my diet too much, but I haven't gained anything, so it's been
fine. Thanksgiving. It doesn't count.
Well, last week it was all kind of screw anyways, because it was raining and because I had fucked up my foot like earlier in the week. So like I tried walking on it, and that only screwed up the like side of my calf instead because I was kind of walking on the outside of my foot. And even though the bottom of my foot wasn't hurting as much anymore, the side of my foot was just, it just like that muscle just got tensed up. And
getting old sucks, huh?
I guess, yeah. So I was hobbling around with that, but hopefully I feel fine enough to play DDR again this week, so I'm going to
do that. So. Yeah. I hope so. I want to come over and play Nick, Please Not So Quick and
do
it all night.
Yeah, we need to pick a day or something, maybe all the right. weekend or something.
We'll make that work. Well, also joining us virtually via Skype, we're welcoming an old friend back to the show here who is celebrating a classic game of his own a little bit this week. Hey, YY, are you there on the line with us?
Oh, Nick, Please Not So Quick.
Yeah, oh, my favorite. That song is my jam. That was the song that really made me fall in love with DDR. I was like, this song is so over the top. Like,
it's pretty ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, yeah. As video games should be. Video games should be over the top ridiculous. Those are my favorite.
A little bit.
How are you doing, YYR?
I'm actually doing pretty well. Yeah, I actually was just playing in the groove earlier, and I nice. Passed Hardcore of the North, which was ridiculous because that has more steps than any other in the groove single expert official chart. So that was cool.
I was not aware. I really would love to play Kyle's new Step Maniacs game at some point, though. I know that's. I think it's doing really well overseas. Like in Germany. I keep seeing on his Facebook, I sold another 5,000 machines in Germany. Oh, I'm making these numbers up. But, you know, it's like his game is huge in Germany. He's like he made the David Hasselhoff of video games.
Well, I'll say this much. We do have a machine in New Jersey at 8 on the Break.
Of course.
And I have gotten to play on it. And, I mean, if you like to play double, it's lacking in content right now. But in every other respect, it feels very polished, very fun to play. And, I apologize for any baby screaming in the background because she's very excited right now.
Don't apologize for that. And 8 on the Break. I've been there. It was many years ago. It was many, many years ago. But my favorite arcade in New Jersey, the only one I've been to. I'll say that. Free plug.
Not much has changed either. They still have delicious break steaks at the bar. And yeah.
Good to know.
Classic games all over the place and a lot of music games.
Well, speaking of classic games, YYR, you're kind of calling in a bit tonight because you're celebrating an anniversary. Obviously, you've been celebrating a lot of new changes in your life with your new child and all, but you're kind of celebrating a big birthday as well, right?
Yeah, something like that. So on November 20th, 2008, actually, I think it was November 19th that this thing launched, the Xbox Live Community Games, which then was later renamed to Xbox Live Indie Games. And then on November 20th, Snake 360 came out. So, it's been 10 years.
So are you here to lobby for Snake 360 to be a classic game of the week? Because I don't think Jamie was aware. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
I don't know about that. That would be, you know, pretty epic to make it onto Orange Lounge Radio Classic Game of the Week. But, you know, I'm not going to have any delusions of grandeur. But no, it's a Switch version when I see in chat. Thanks, Dark Tetsuya.
That's when you know you've made it, because everybody will ask on your AMA on Reddit, Switch version when?
Switch port begging. If you get Switch port begging, you may, in fact, have made it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, 10 years later, so, I mean, I guess the kind of sad thing is, obviously, the Xbox Indie Games, as we know it from before, no longer exists, but they kind of brought it back in a different form, right?
So it's called the Xbox Live Creators Program. And if you have an Xbox One and you go to the store, underneath all of the, you know, sale, boom, AAA stuff, yeah, you're going to find this little tab that says Creators Collection. And if you go in there, you're going to find this, you know, little sectioned off, kind of like Xbox Live Indie Games was. But nonetheless, you're going to find a bunch of stuff in there that is not rated by the ESRB and does not have achievements or online play, but otherwise, you know, is put together by, you know, hobbyists or, you know, people that couldn't get approved for the independent developer program. Just, you know, some fun stuff that was approved by Microsoft for release and that you can buy just like Xbox Live Indie Games.
But unfortunately, the Xbox Live Indie Games didn't cross over, so it's like Snake 360 unavailable on this, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right. None of the old games made it. The only chance that the old games make it over is if the developer decides to republish it. And, you know, they can't just go because some things have changed. Things like how the games save files, because if you think about it, you know, Xbox One works a lot differently than 360 in that regard. You don't have, you know, well, you can have a hard drive or a storage unit or, you know, USB or whatever. The Xbox One works with cloud saves, and they follow you everywhere, and some different work has to be done to enable that, and I am looking into it, by the way.
Mm. Nice.
I'm actually hoping to release my first title on the Creators Collection probably in the next couple of months, and that's going to be Falling Plus. I think, honestly, Falling Plus is like my Ridge Racer. I'm releasing it on every platform that I want to be on to get my feet wet, and then after that, the other stuff will come.
Falling is kind of your ode to like 80s classics, right? I've played that one. It's kind of a fun little puzzler. Feels like something that would have been. What feels like something that would have been in an arcade in the 80s.
That's exactly the vibe I was going for. It's, you know, basically, I mean, I'm thinking Bubble Bobble. It doesn't quite have that level of complexity, but, you know, it's basically like, you know, you're a penguin, the walrus is trying to bust in, and colored blocks are falling from the ceiling. Of course, later levels, this happens faster, but what you're doing is you're matching colors to clear the blocks, and of course, every so often, the walrus is going to get in your way, and you have to kind of crush him, smash him against another block, and so on.
Poor walrus.
Yeah.
So let me ask this, like, now, you know, we're 10 years after you putting out, you know, Snake 360. What mm-hmm. what have you kind of learned about gaming through this whole, the gaming yourself, the indie games? What have you learned through this whole experience of putting a game out and, you know, continuing to, as a hobbyist, you know, put games out? Because obviously, you know, we were big fans of Bungie Faritossing on 360 as well. you know, we still stand by Super Multitasking as a game that,
and thank you for that.
Its breakthrough is coming any day now on Steam. We're waiting.
And by
for
the
it.
Way, it's on sale for 20% off at the moment. Ooh, as part of the Steam Autumn sale.
There you go.
Which does end soon.
Cheap plug, and, but I approve.
Going to chat, SSJ100 Matt. Does Falling Plus have a kill screen? No, sadly, it does not.
Bummer. That's okay. Maybe Falling Plus Plus second mix new stage.
But one thing, okay, so what have I learned? So, I mean, Snake 360, I put 11 really hard months of development into. I don't think I've ever worked so hard on anything ever, including at my job, so sorry, job. But definitely I learned that however hard you think it is to actually put a game together and release it, multiply that by probably around between 5 and 10, and that's how hard it is. And most of it comes with, you know, the part at the end, because it's one thing to get a game working. That's easy. That's the easy part. That's the fun part. You know, you put together your concept and it's like, hey, I can play this and it's fun. Great, I'm done. No, you're not done, because now what you have to do is you have to make sure it works at a variety of different resolutions, because if you're releasing on PC, you don't want to be told, well, you have to run this at 720p widescreen. No, actually you want to run it at whatever resolution you want. And maybe you want it to work with controllers. Well, okay, now test it with the Xbox 360 and Xbox One controllers and the DualShock 4 and the Steam controller and the Switch Pro controller, and make sure it works perfectly with all of those. And if you're releasing a Mac version, make sure it works on with all of those controllers on Mac also.
Man, this QA testing is the worst. That's why Bethesda doesn't bother.
Right.
But no, so, you're right. It's those things. I mean, not that should stop people from making their own game, for sure, but there is lot more that goes into it that people like don't realize.
The polish is really the hardest part, and not just because you have to be very thorough, but also because it's not the exciting part. The exciting part is putting your game together and seeing it come to life. Like, the most amazing part of Super Multitasking was making it, you know, to the point where I had enough mini games that I could create the algorithm that starts and stops the mini games. That magic when it first worked and when I realized the concept was fun, that was magic. That was awesome. That was amazing. Right. I lit up like a Christmas tree, and I don't even celebrate Christmas. So, but you know, then it's like, the actual work of getting the game ready for release, it's many, many times that. And Black Wolf in chat says the last 10% of development takes 90% of the time, and he's pretty much right. And also, he said the part YYR is talking about is the part where Loki quits.
No, Loki didn't even get that far, but yeah.
Yeah, I can't even get far enough to mod a stupid theme for Stepmania, okay? Like, I was watching YouTube instead today.
Bobby's used that quote before, and I've heard that, you know, similar iterations of that quite a bit when it comes to game development.
It's very true, yeah. Definitely.
So what's
and
next?
And 006 is just quickly reminding us that Bethesda does do QA testing. It's just done by the gamers.
Let's be fair. Bethesda does QA testing. It's just Bethesda execs say, fucking ship it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. The boardroom decisions are usually like, it's not that big a deal. Gamers will buy it anyway. What's next for you? What are you gonna use this 10 year of experience in the future?
Well, honestly, I'm not looking forward another 10 years so much as this next year, and it is a lot more difficult with a baby around. But I think what I'm really going to try to do is build my brand, or attempt to, over the next year by expanding my offerings on more platforms, and let everybody know. So the beginning of that is I'm moving Falling Plus from itch.io, where it's been, to Steam.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Actually releasing in 5 days on November 30th.
Oh, shoot, there you go. Very timely announcement. People might be listening to this on November 30th.
Well, if you're listening right now and you're in the chat room, the first thing I am going to do when I get off this call is anybody who is in the chat room is going to receive a Steam key for this game.
What? That's awesome.
You get Falling Plus, and you get Falling Plus, and you get Falling Plus. You all get Falling Plus.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. It's the holiday spirit. I love it. That's amazing. Everybody in the chat room is getting a free game tonight. That's great. That's very generous of you, Santa. I appreciate that. And you say you don't even celebrate Christmas, but still, the holiday spirit. It's all there.
Hey, it could be for Hanukkah, too.
That's right.
Mind you, if you're listening on the podcast feed, it's not, you know, all for naught. If you send me an email at yyr@yyrgames.com and mention OLR, you will get one as well.
That's crazy. That's amazing. You might want to put a deadline on that, though, so that people don't go like, hey,
you have a week. You have until the next episode is on.
Post a form, yeah. If you don't recognize a name, YYR, you need to run it by me. If you start getting flooded with all these emails from like other countries, I pretty much know who all the listeners in other countries are at this point. So I'll let you know. That's awesome. So, yeah, everybody in the chat room is very jazzed about this. Bond 006 says, YYR coming in with the gift for all the girls and boys. let's see. Okay, I like some of these other questions coming in, too. Black Wolf wants to know, is it unlocked now or does it unlock on the 30th?
These are pre-release redemption codes. You can play it right away.
That's awesome. That is so great. Okay, cool. And
if you want to give me money and pay for the game, then feel free to pass the code on to somebody else.
That's so awesome of you to do. And actually, let's say, well, also before I get to that, SSG100 Matt is asking a question. I think this is really good. What are your thoughts on the Intellivision Amico, and would you try to get your games on the console? You know, Amico is a very unique type of platform that might be kind of trying to cater itself to more like, you know, developers that are, well, first off, they'd have to be exclusive games, but I suppose you could always do a Falling Plus Plus, or you know what I mean. But I mean, since you try to invoke 80s classics, I could see where something like Intellivision might be right up your alley.
So it's funny that you ask that, because remember I said I'm trying to build my brand.
Uh-huh.
So there's a multiple pronged approach here. I am going to be releasing Falling Plus on Steam. The next thing I'm going to be working on after a super multitasking update is I'm officially announcing Bungie Ferret Tossing Turbo. That will be coming to Steam next.
Yay! Bungie Ferret Tossing is coming back! Woo! So exciting. For those that don't
improved
know...
improved graphics.
In case we do have some newer listeners out there, for those that don't know, Bungie Ferret Tossing was a game YYR made based off a conversation that happened on Orange Lounge Radio. We were talking about one of our many dream games. YYR made a dream game here on Orange Lounge Radio a reality, which is amazing.
And yes, Bobby Black Wolf, it will have the Wolf News segment, although you are not the villain, no. But yes, it'll feature improved graphics and also an arranged mode where not only can you add turbo speed to it, but also you can unlock all kinds of fun things that will allow you to tweak the gameplay and break it. Yeah, so please look forward to that. I'm hoping to ship it sometime first quarter of next year. Once I have, you know, that stuff on Steam, I'm also planning to try to release this stuff on Windows 10 and Xbox One. Now, I'm hoping to have all that stuff done and possibly a re-release of Snake by the middle of next year. Guess what happens the middle of next year? The Intellivision Amico dev kits become available. Now, I am racking my brain when I lay down to sleep, when I'm in the shower, when I'm doing other things. I'm racking my brain trying to come up with some good game concepts, not just to make a game, but to make a game that will play very well on that weirdo controller that they're shipping with the Amico. And
I wish I could
if
help
I come
you.
Up with something really great, and you know what? I have a couple of beginnings right now, but I'm still working it out. And I actually think I'm going to pick up in an old Intellivision just so I can get more of a sense for what the dial is going to feel like.
You might be the first dev I've heard on a show lobbying to make an Intellivision game.
Well, here's the thing. If you look at the specs, first of all, it has to be something original. That's fine. Second of all, it has to be between $3 and $8. All my games are between $3 and $8. All right. They're looking probably to put, you know, retro inspired, short burst types of gameplay. That's what I do. It seems to me like it would be silly for me not to try it.
Yeah. We're going to help however we can. I mean, Tommy is a busy guy. He's been on this show before. We have an email. So, you know, you never know. You never know. We'll try to help you out best we can. So,
that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. I really appreciate you given that, doing that Oprah moment with falling for all of our chatters and listeners. It's really, really great.
You know,
of you.
It's the least that I can do. I mean, not only do you guys plug my stuff at every opportunity, but you've also provided me with all of this entertainment over the last, you know, over 10 years.
You do what you do because you love video games. We do what we do because we love video games. We all kind of contribute in our own way. Hey, Bobby wants to know if he can stream, if there's an embargo on streaming, or if he can just stream it after OLR tonight.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
All right. You
just mention it. It's coming out in a few days, and that's it.
Yeah, he'll work in your plug. You're good.
Awesome. But yeah, just finishing up the Amico business.
Yeah.
You know, going back to Snake 360, another thing that I did learn is that when you have a young marketplace, there are more eyeballs looking at it. Mm. The most money I ever made off of one of my games was when Snake 360 just came out, and there were fewer games on the store, and there were lots of eyeballs looking at this brand new thing that just came out.
Hey,
so
you know what's funny? You know what's funny, YYR? Do you know when OLR had the most listeners ever?
When it was new?
The week iTunes podcasting launched.
Because
remember, this show existed well before then. We had the To Go edition that was on when you had to use like Lemon Potter and all that, all those other apps to get podcasts on your iPod because there weren't even the phones yet. So this show existed back then. So we were on the store. I think there's maybe only like one or two other gaming podcasts that exist today that were on the store when iTunes launched that. And we've never been bigger. And honestly and humbly, we'll probably never be that big again. But that's
okay. You know what? I'm just hoping. I mean, I haven't been that big since Snake 360, and I'm just hoping that, you know, basically the reason I'm trying to build the brand, you know, release a few games on Steam, release a few games on Xbox. It's like I'm hoping that this is what happens. YYR Games is announced as one of the first developers on Amico. Who the heck is that? They look into me. Oh, they have a few games available. Hey, this looks interesting. Click, 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 buy. So maybe it'll happen. Maybe not. But it's worth a shot, right?
Hey, if we're rooting for anybody here at OLR, YYR, it's you. We wanna see it happen for you, so you deserve it. And not just because you hand our listeners free stuff. You know we've supported your stuff anyway. So I really wish you the success, and I do hope we get to see your name on the television splash screen, in a year or so. So
thank you. I will address Bonds 006, speaking of the free stuff. He says, so are we doing QA for your game, YYR?
Well, ain't nothing in this world truly free.
I will tell you this. This is actually an update to an already released game, although I did fix a number of issues in this version. The only thing that has not been exhaustively tested is the leaderboard browser. So I'm hoping that a few of you play it and that I will be able to, you know, take a look and quickly patch things if they don't work. But it should work because it was just based off of super multitaskings, and super multitaskings works. So it should be fine.
All right. That's still, you never know people's weird PC configurations and stuff. You never know what feedback you might get in the next couple of days. And that's valuable feedback to have.
Yeah. And I'd appreciate it. So thanks.
Yeah. Be
everybody.
Sure to do the thumbs up, the ratings, do the things that'll get it noticed. Cause we want YYR to succeed. So,
yeah,
you're already a success, YYR. All right. we do have to let you go, though, so we can wrap up our show and let Bobby do a stream of the game. So, but thank you so much again. And I know we'll have you back on the show soon when you're ready to announce whatever your next project is coming to Steam or wherever it is you go, and someday in television.
All righty.
All right.
I'll be here.
All right. Take care, my friend.
All right. Have a great week, and I'll start sending out those codes momentarily.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much. Bye. Take care.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. That is awesome. Why I did that. Just so you know, I did not know he was going to do that. I kind of knew that he was going to tell it. I knew we were kind of getting the exclusive on a new Steam thing like that. I knew. I did not know he was going to do that. So that is really, really cool. Why we are to do that. So awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing that as well. All right. Anyhow, I know. Do you want to hear the cruel irony in this whole thing that's really funny?
What's that?
So I guess Ragenator forgot the show's on tonight or something because he's doing his own Twitch stream, which is fine. You know, there's only so many days in the week. You got to do what you got to do when. I don't care. But the one night someone's here giving away a free game on Steam, he's not here. Poor guy.
I can give them a copy.
All right. Now,
he can
send the email. We everybody knows that dude's name. YYR will recognize him in a heartbeat. I would want somebody to be like, oh, email this guy. He'll give you a free. Like, I want to make sure that the people who redeem the code are actually people who listen to OLR. So make sure. Just try to keep it amongst friends, y'all. All right. Anyway, let's get into some rapid fire news. I don't know how we top free game announcement. Do you get free games listening to other podcasts? Not that I'm here to. I love all podcasts. You guys know that, but I'm gonna take the little the little promotion opportunities.
I don't listen to a lot of podcasts anymore. I used to listen to the Devlog a lot, that Unity programming podcast, but I haven't listened to that in a while. I need to catch up on that. But
Bobby in chat with the Debbie Downer comment. Actually, a lot of podcasts give out free codes to every listener. Bobby, to every listener. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. All right. Maybe they do. I don't know. I thought, but it's not for this game. I'll take what I can get. Sorry, Loki.
Yeah. So.
All right. Let's get into some rapid fire news. There is plenty of other stuff going on in the game industry. We'll do some rapid fire news, Loki.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about how Super Mario Odyssey is getting some new costumes. Yay. I haven't played Super Mario Odyssey in a while. I really should go back and do that because I still haven't gotten all of the collectibles in that. But if you're continuing to play the game, you'll be able to get a Santa outfit. Or they also have the 8-bit Mario. Kind of looks like the 8-bit Mario amiibo that they had. So you'll be able to check out that kind of voxel Mario look, and that's going to be coming soon, I believe, in an update.
I imagine it'll probably look like the 8-bit amiibo does,
yes,
kind of in that
3D. Exactly what I said.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks
sorry.
Like the amiibo.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, check it out. And then there's an expansion coming to Civ 6, which is going to be February 14th, called The Gathering Storm. And apparently it's the second expansion for the game, and they're adding, global warming or different, weather in the game. So They have, like, apparently how you use natural resources. It's going to, you know, affect the weather, natural disasters, and global warming. So you have the balance between, you know, progress and destroying the planet.
I've been slacking on Civilization VI. I need to play more, but I kind of love that they're incorporating this into the game, even though it's almost like it kind of reminds me of when, like, flooding was a natural disaster in the original SimCity. It's kind of like they've taken that to the next step, which is sadly rooted in reality a little bit. Yeah.
Saying, aside from the climate stuff, they also have expanded technology, civic trees into a future era, and adds 9 new leaders across 8 new civilizations.
Oh, wow.
So,
well, is there any civilization you can't be at this point? It's pretty crazy. Epics. You can't.
Epics?
Yeah, like in Winter Games, and this came out on the Commodore 64. I don't know if you ever played those Olympic games. Like,
no, I remember the California games.
You could pick what country you were from, and one of the countries you could pick was Epics.
Epics, you can't be Epics.
The studio that made the game. So that's the one civilization that's not represented in Civ at this point is Epics. Anyway. That's at the forefront of my mind because just recently Bobby was doing one of his streams of the Commodore 64 Mini. Mm-hmm. And so he was playing because, like, all of those games, because I didn't really realize this, but they were releasing one of those games like every year. They did Summer Games. They did Winter Games. They did Summer Games 2. They did California Games. They did World Games. I forgot that even existed. Like, they were cranking out those games.
Yeah, I used to play a ton of California games. That was on, I think the NES or Super NES was when I was playing that. NES, but then I had that on the Lynx, too. That was my go-to game on the Lynx. Because the Lynx had, it was BMX, there was surfing, hacky sack, and I don't remember the last one.
Yeah, that was
one.
California games, yeah.
Frisbee, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Yeah, and it's impossible to catch a Frisbee. That is all on the Commodore 64 Mini.
Yeah.
All those games are. So the games. I don't know what else you call that series.
California is hacky sack. That's aged well.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, the World Games was pretty cool, too. Yeah. So, it was just, you know, they had all...
The BMX one was fun because it's just going downhill. So, it was just like, okay, I'm going to YOLO this right now and see what happens, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting, as Bobby Blackwell points out, because it's almost like a little time capsule of society in the 80s because you can be from the USSR. You can be from West Germany and, like, you know, because these games were from 1984, 1985 when the world was different. So
yes.
It's kind of neat. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to digress too much.
Czechoslovakia.
Didn't mean to make a Civilization VI discussion about California games, but here we are. I did it. Anyway, let's talk about Netflix and shows that are doing very well on Netflix. The Castlevania series, apparently doing very well.
I haven't watched it, thought about it the other day, but then my wife's like,
I need to. I just haven't got around to it. I keep getting sucked into MMOs. But anyway, executive producer Adi Shankar has mentioned about the Netflix Castlevania series. It really overperformed. It did crazy well. We immediately got greenlit for season 3. I wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for the fans. So congrats on the success. I hear a lot of great things about the anime. I will sit down and watch it at some point. You know I'm going to watch that Ingress anime when it finally comes to Netflix.
Is that coming to Netflix?
It's airing in Japan right now. So it's doing like the weekly thing in Japan. And then I think like this month or sometime really soon, once all the episodes have aired, then they're going to release it on Netflix.
Am I still
going to
understand what Ingress is about after watching? Because I fucking don't know what Ingress is about. I just play the game like, I don't know what the fucking lore is.
I know.
None of this makes any goddamn sense.
I know. It's kind of like World of Warcraft has this really deep lore that, you know, what it means to be Horde and what it means to be Alliance. And Ingress is kind of the same thing with Enlightened.
Like, I keep seeing these, like, Ingress Prime advertisements on YouTube and stuff like that. And they're like, I'm like, I don't. What's going on?
We're seeing some new players pop up in the game, so it's kind of refreshing to have that game kind of get a little kick in the ass and get invigorated.
I just don't have the free time for that. Just time. Yeah.
You know what though? I found it to be a good, like, because I have been, there's been the double XP thing that's been going on. I don't know if I talked about this in my gaming week. Probably just I've been trying to focus on the mobile games less because I know they're kind of like my ongoing. I do them every week, but. Because double XP is going on in Ingress right now, like, I have been out there trying to do like a lot of microfielding. I was over at one of the cemeteries today, just walking. And I was, you know, walking for a good probably hour out there. Now, granted, it's walk, stop. But sometimes it's like, oh, I got to walk from this corner of the cemetery all the way back over there because I have that key over there. So, you know, it's decent exercise. It's better than sitting at home playing California games, hacky sack.
Yeah.
So. There's that. Oh, anyway, Castlevania is doing very well and looks like it will have another version that's coming out there. Loki, you may have to help me on this one because for some reason the story is not loading, but I don't know if there's much more to say on this other than that Dead or Alive Extreme 3 Scarlet is coming out for the PlayStation 4 and the Switch.
That's an odd game for the Switch, but okay.
Whatever. So those of you that are fans of Dead or Alive Extreme, which is, if I remember right, the volleyball and the titties and all the anime titties.
Yeah,
you'd probably
and
be a
it's
fan
actually
of this.
It's two different ones. So they have the Scarlet for PlayStation 4, and on the Switch, it's Dead or Alive Festival 2018.
Oh, excuse me.
So it's going to be a different game, I guess. That one, they're going to launch March 20th, 2019 in Japan. And it says Misaki, who appears in the DMM games, is going to be in Dead or Alive Extreme Venus Vacation for PC. Mm. So there's a PC game coming too. And apparently pre-orders are open. They have an official website open. So I have no idea what all this is, but I guess we'll find out.
Going to chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Luckily, the chat room is really into the games discussion here. VidPower says, I like how Hacky Sack in California Games is called Footbag. That's right. It was called Footbag. And I think it's one of those things kind of like how Kleenex is really tissue, but everybody calls it Kleenex. You know what I mean? I think Hacky Sack is a brand. So I think that's why they couldn't call it that. Like Xerox is a copy and all that. And if you're I remember there was some famous court case where, like, if your name gets associated with it so much,
You end up losing.
You end up kind of like losing your, I guess, trademark in some ways or whatever. And I think it was Xerox or somebody that lost one of the. It was one of those big ones that everybody kind of associates, you know, with that. So, but I think that's what the deal is with Hacky Sack in that case. So, anyhow, all right, let's move on. We're going to talk about what is coming out in stores this week. Obviously, it's going to be dying down a little bit, although
not,
I know we got Smash is next week.
Not
Katamari,
too much, yeah. So there's still stuff, you know, coming out this week. So we've got, you know,
slowing down a little bit.
Not a whole ton. I mean, like, okay so right. Like Darksiders 3, that's a pretty all decent right, release. Right. That's on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. We have Spin Tires Mud Runner American Wilds Edition on the Switch.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we all have that pre-ordered.
That's apparently a pretty good racing game.
Is it? All right,
it's
all
not
right.
So much a racing game. It's like an off-roading game.
I'll stop talking shit.
Artifact, which is on PC, Mac, and Linux. Ketsui Destiny. Kizuna Jigoku Tachi on PlayStation 4. It's a shoot 'em up. We have Parkitect on PC, Mac, and Linux. Persona Q 2 New Cinema Labyrinth on 3DS. Ark Survival Evolved on the Switch. And let's see, Fighting EX Lair on PC. And that's it.
Nice. All right, traveling over to Japan. A few releases in Japan this week. Obviously, the calendar runs a little different over there. So we do have a few releases on the PlayStation 4 this week, including Ketsui Death Tiny, Kizuna Jiko Tachi comes out this week, Steel Rats, Million Arthur Arcana Blood, and then Game Tengoku Cruisin' Mix Special comes out in a regular and a limited edition called a Gokuraku Box. Comes out on the PlayStation 4 this week. On the Switch this week, a game called Lapis Reabyss comes out this week, as well as Kamen Rider Climax Scramble ZO in a premium limited edition comes out this week in Japan as well. A game called Billion Road and Super Bomberman R gets a price reduction on the Switch if you still haven't checked that out. Also, I'm sure a lot of people wanting to check out Overcooked 2. If you're in Japan, you get your release of that game, which I've watched my buddy JD play those games a little bit, but I haven't really played them a lot myself, but I hear they're an awful lot of fun, so I probably need to spend more time with it. Hey, guess what? The plug has not been pulled on the Vita yet. One release on the Vita in Japan this week. Benhiro Tenjiro Ayakashi Kitan Futai comes out this week on the PlayStation Vita. Heading over to the UK, if you wouldn't mind, Loki.
All right, Darksiders 3 is going to be coming out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Asterix and Obelix XXL2 Limited Edition on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and the Switch. Crash Dummy on PlayStation 4 and the Switch.
What'd you call me?
And Senran Kagura Burst Renewal on PlayStation 4. Ride 3 on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Minecraft Story Mode Season 2 on the Switch. Riot Civil Unrest on PlayStation 4 and the Switch. Pro Fishing Simulator on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And that's it.
All right, let's get to the email, because you guys send us emails and we love to read them. Also, I'll never get sick of this song. Still happy. We're still going to... We might change some of the music when we move over to Twitch, but I don't think I could ever get rid of Journey to the Wonderland. I love this song too much.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's get to an email this week. The first one is from YYR, who was just on this program for several minutes. But you know
what? Way to monopolize all the segments.
You know what, though? If you're going to give a game away for free on the show, I'm going to let you have all the time you want. So here you go. Actually, and there's some good thoughts and points in this email, so let's get to it. YYR sent us an email. It says, "Hello, LR. Just a few thoughts on last week's episode. Rob, your suspicion was correct. The version of Tetris on NES that was created and published by Nintendo themselves was strictly a single-player affair. That's what I thought. And had no multiplayer of any kind. It was also hot garbage compared to the far superior Tenken version, which is still, to date, the only console version of Tetris that has a co-op mode where two players position pieces in the same well at the same time. It's awesome, and everyone should try it out at least once." You know what the NES version had? I swear to God. Do you know what the NES version had that made it, like, that part of the reason why people remember it more so and so? The music. It's the music in the NES version. I'm telling you. That song is still in this Tetris Effect 1989 skin and all it says is crazy. Anyway, not that I'm slamming Tengen Tetris, because obviously I remember that version, that's what I had thought last week. I was like, wait a minute, I thought people really desired that version of the game because it had something special that they took out of the Nintendo one. I thought it was multiplayer. And as it turns out, I was right. All right, on the subject of Microsoft and whether they should care about Japan, quite honestly, I don't think they should bother. They put in a lot of effort back in the 360 days, recruiting Japanese developers, producing exclusive JRPGs, and what did it get them? By the end of the generation, they still had only sold about 1.6 million 360s in Japan versus 10 million PlayStation 3s. Worse yet, none of the momentum they had built carried over to the Xbox One, which is floundering there somewhere around the 100K mark. Yeah, but I think Microsoft, like, gave up. Like, I think, honestly, a lot of those sales are, like, you know how, like, people here will import stuff from Japan, like, really?
Yeah.
I think there are players in Japan that will import stuff from America that they don't necessarily always get. Like, a lot of the Western, stuff that's developed over here.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, like, things like Fortnite weren't developed in Japan, and there's probably people over there that want to play that type of stuff. I mean, that's a bad example, because I'm sure there's a localized release of Fortnite. I know what, World of Warcraft was a big example that always has come up. They don't have World of Warcraft in Japan. That's another reason why Final Fantasy XIV has been able to succeed in many ways. It's not as big as WoW. I'm not trying to say that. But in Japan, it's bigger because WoW doesn't exist. So anyway, that's an example. let's see. Where was I? Not to mention console hardware sales in Japan have decreased literally every year since 2006, only increasing in 2017, mostly due to the launch of the Switch. I just feel like getting Japan to care about an Xbox console will be way too expensive and to justify the potential reward. Xbox remains popular in America and, to a lesser extent, Europe. If game developers want to sell to this audience, regardless of where they're located, they can consider Xbox development and leave it at that. And for me, maybe that's what it comes down to. It's not even so much the fans as much as it is the developer. And granted, maybe my perspective is a little bit skewed because I tend to gravitate more towards the Japanese RPGs. Hell, this show was founded around a Japanese-based music game. So I think I just tend to gravitate towards those games. But even in the 16 years we've been doing Orange Lounge Radio, I think we've seen a, you know, very, like, Japan market, OLR market. Well, that's a unique market, too. U.S. market, Europe market has become more and more and more of a worldwide market. Hence why we don't have regions on the Switch anymore. And, you know, it's more becoming a thing you don't have on your systems. You know what I mean? Anyway. Lastly, Loki mused about why Cruisin' Blast hadn't come out on Switch. I think the reason is simple. It was developed by Raw Thrills, a company that exclusively develops arcade games. They don't do any work on consoles, so unless Nintendo contracts another developer to do the port, I don't think we'll ever see one. Thanks, as always, for the show, and have a great week. Have fun. YYR.
Or any Cruisin' game, because it's still a Nintendo property. I mean,
yeah, but those Raw Thrills, they do a lot of those arcade experiences. I feel like everything you see in an arcade now.
That's exactly what I was going to say. All the games that are out there, it's like Raw Thrills. I mean, even they do.
Props to them for keeping it alive. honestly.
They're usually a big draw for a lot of the stuff there. So.
Speaking of things that are alive and things that are not going to be alive much longer, another thing that YYR brought up in chat earlier, Guitar Hero TV, that whole Guitar Hero online mode, that's gone December 1st. So, it's kind of...
Shrug my shoulders. It was $5 at Target the other day.
It's unfortunate that... The music game renaissance, when Rock Band 4 and this new Guitar Hero, it's kind of sad that kind of all hit with a whimper.
I understand. It's a lot of it is because it's expensive to license music so they have to monetize it and everything. But at the same time, I also feel like that it's Activision and they want to fucking monetize that into the fucking ground. So, I don't feel entirely as bad. I just wish it was more of like, hey, we have original music a la DJ Hero, I don't know. Maybe those games need more original tracks in them and rely less on licensed stuff. Although licensed does sell.
Act Def points out Rock Band is still going as far as I know, but it's not dominating the conversation like it used to. Rock Band 2 was the new thing. You know what I mean? It's fallen back into the niche thing, which is fine. But anyway, all right, let's move on. More emails. Robert M. emails us and says, "Welcome back. You seem to pick a heck of a week off. Not that it could have been planned." Yeah, it is. I've been saying ever since I bought those tickets to the Fan Fest, I'm like, we're not going to be here that week. Weird question: with Incineroar in Smash Brothers Ultimate and Dasuidai in Pokken Tournament, do you think we'll see pre-marinara, but that's not what it says. It's pre-marina, because ocean. I always want to say pre-marinara. Do you think we'll say pre-marina, and in what? It's honestly is my least favorite of the three starters, but I know pre-marina has fans, so I don't know. Maybe in a Let's Go game in the future. I'll go with that. I'm going to go with that as the safe answer.
They do have the option to gift you stuff via internet, so yeah.
I don't know.
Codes.
But the point Robert M is getting at is that you've got one fighting game over here. You got Pokken with Dasuidai. You got one fighting game over here with Incineroar, Smash Brothers. So where's the fighting game that pre-Marina is going to go in? You know what? They'll get an RPG. I guess Pokemon's an RPG.
We don't know DLC is going to be yet.
You know what? Maybe in the future, wait 14 years from now and we'll get Pokemon Let's Go pre-marinara for your pasta. All right. Anyway.
Pre-marinara. So it's just noodles.
Pre-marinara and noodles.
This is just dry noodles.
And Tangela. That's it. It's a match made in heaven. Pre-marinara and Tangela. And Tangela pops out of a box. I'm back again. All right. Anyway. Also, do you think there will be representation of the Sun and Moon era in Detective Pikachu? We never did get a chance to really talk about that trailer, the Detective Pikachu trailer.
Pretty awesome.
It was one of those things I was kind of like, that's not what I expected at all, but I don't hate it. I kind of like the whole Pokemon are real, you guys. No, they're real. They look real. They look furry when they shouldn't look furry. It's
but they're animals. They're supposed
to
be furry.
I know.
They look weird.
Anyway, let's see. And do you think there'll be representation of that in Detective Pikachu? I think so. I think even if it's just a little throwaway, Sun and Moon still are the current games. And I think Gen 8 will be a holiday release at this point. I think Let's Go seems to be doing well enough that it's kind of Nintendo can kind of rest on that for an entire year till we get to next holiday period.
So you're going to do Let's Go something that's going to be a cross between the two,
Gen 2. Why not? Let's Go Sentret and Spinarak.
I'm just saying, because they had, they always do red and blue, and then yellow, and it's the two combined together, or is that?
Well, Let's Go Pikachu kind of is flat out a remake of Yellow. And then all they did with Let's Go Eevee is they just kind of substituted Pikachu. Well, my understanding is, but it's not that you're playing this radically different game. It's just that you've got Eevee instead of Pikachu, and some of the ones you run across are different. But they're not fundamentally different plots or anything like that. And
Were the other games fundamentally different?
To be fair, I just want to be clear before somebody calls me out on it. Let's Go is also not really a direct remake of Yellow because the character of Blue and I think Red are in it. So it's kind of like you're going through the footsteps of what these characters went through 20 years ago. And plus, it does have things like Alolan Pokemon, and I think I heard Mega Forms are in it too.
Yes.
Mega Evolutions, which didn't exist in Gen 1. So it's very much like a remix, but it's most rooted in Pokemon
you
Yellow.
Get like the X and Y Megas for like Mewtwo as well, I'm assuming that's from X and Y. So
That whole thing started, X and Y was where that started. So Gen 6.
Yeah, so yeah. It's all sorts of weird. Yeah. And then Meltan, which is technically Gen 8, so you know you have that in there too.
Yeah, so. Oh, ActDeft also points out Eevee was the rival Pokemon in Yellow. Because in the other games, you had to pick Bulbasaur, Charmander, or Squirtle, and your rival would always pick whatever was strong. Because, you know, Charmander beats Bulbasaur, beats Squirtle, beats Charmander. So your rival would always pick whatever was strong. But since there isn't that in Pokemon Yellow, your rival picks Eevee. So.
Yeah. And I named my rival name because, like, I was trying to think of something clever, but it was late, and I didn't think of anything clever, so I just did a God of War meme. So his name is Boy.
my rival is Mr. Smush.
Mr. Smush. Yeah, I did. That's better than mine.
I did it on stream.
My kids, unprompted, did each other. So you know.
Oh, that's funny.
that was kind of funny.
But your rival's not really like your rival.
Yeah, it's like.
It's just like your little buddy that also wants to succeed and is always testing you. So anyway. There we go back on our Pokemon bullshit, but that's because of the email. I blame the email. Speaking of movie trailers, though, you know I got to digress for a minute. I got to ask about, because y'all, The Lion King. What'd you think of that Lion King preview? That looked hot to me.
It's recycling our properties.
I don't give a shit. Like, it looks really good. It looks so, like, well, here's the thing. Like, honestly, okay, have you ever seen the Broadway show?
No.
Where it's like people in puppets.
Yes.
But it looks very classic. I thought that's what the movie was going to be. I thought the movie was going to be like people in puppet outfits, but it was done in a very – like, I know it sounds ridiculous when I say it, but if you've seen the Broadway show, it's very artistic and very well done. Like, spoiler alert for a Broadway show that's been out there forever. When they start The Lion King, obviously it's the Circle of Life, you know, the big opening, right? Everybody fucking knows that song. If you've ever seen The Lion King in your life, that's the big song. So when you see it in the theater or in the Broadway theater, or if it travels around, whatever, like, not only do people come out on stage, but then all of a sudden people are coming down the aisles. You have these big giraffe and elephant puppets that come down the aisles and they're all around you. And so it's like everything is surrounding you and it's magnificent. It's like, holy shit, this is not like your normal type of play. So I thought the movie was going to be like the puppetry type of stuff, because I thought when you hear live action, I didn't think it was just going to be, oh, they're going to make everybody look like Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it's just like the live action Aladdin that they're doing, the live action, you know, now it's live action. I'm wondering, though, are they going to incorporate, because didn't they add like parts to the Broadway play that aren't in the
they do some extra songs,
yeah, because they did that with Beauty and the Beast too.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about the Beauty and the Beast remake is they didn't put in songs from the play, they just made up new songs.
I thought they did. Oh, no, I thought it didn't. Was the one from the play.
No, they didn't. I know, like, I think there was a song in the movie called Morning Report that got cut.
Oh,
and
right,
then
right.
That is in the play.
Right.
So maybe it'll be in this live action movie.
I don't know. That's what I'm thinking, because yeah, they did have a deleted song.
Yeah. In Beauty and the Beast, they deleted a song from the movie called Human Again.
Yes.
Which they put in the play.
And I think that was in the movie, though.
I don't think they did it in the remake.
I thought it was.
It was not in the cartoon. Human Again was not in the cartoon.
Right.
It was on like the Blu-ray deleted scene. Yeah. So.
But I think it was in the remake.
Was it? I don't know. I can't keep it all straight anymore. Jesus. All right. Anyway, who knew you were getting a movie show? All right. Let's go. But again, I blame the emailer. This is what happens. But we love it.
Now we're talking about Detective Pikachu. So like regarding that.
Yeah.
So Detective Pikachu, you know, like it was something that when I heard it was coming out, I was like kind of, I don't know if I want to see that. But then now I do want to see that. Now it makes me kind of curious, not necessarily like I'm jumping on board. Oh, by the way, and this is kind of segueing into what I'm talking about here. So there was a cameo in Wreck-It Ralph 2, Sonic the Hedgehog explaining the internet, which I thought was funny because, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog is very prevalent on social media, and it's kind of funny like that. But anyway, speaking of Sonic the Hedgehog, so I'm kind of curious now to see the Sonic the Hedgehog live-action trailer, which could be hot garbage, but it has Jim Carrey in it, and I totally will see it because it has Jim Carrey in it.
I know. All right. Which, again, if people don't know where Loki comes from, it actually has nothing to do with the Marvel character Loki. You got Loki from The Mask with Jim Carrey.
It was from The Mask, yes. Yeah. Yes, because I am a fan of Jim Carrey.
All right. I need to see his
show. Yes, and I did see the Stan Lee cameo in Wreck-It Ralph 2 as well.
All right. Yeah. Anyhow, moving on. One more email from Robert M. I also see that for those who weren't understandably turned off by Animal Crossing Pocket Camp's loot box fortune cookies, they're adding a cabin you can arrange your collected furniture in. So after 1 year, you can finally have a house. I don't know if you borrow bells from Dom Nook to expand it. I'm not quite as excited as for the Switch version, but very interested to see how this works out. Like, Robert M., with all, you know, respect, and I think you're saying you're in the same boat here, the minute they announced that Switch version, uninstalled Animal Crossing from my phone. Who cares? Who cares? Sorry. Good thing Jamie's not here. She'd kick my ass, because I'm sure she's still playing it. But who cares? We got a Switch version on the way. I gotta prepare myself for that, because it's going to be epic. All right. That's it for emails. You should send us emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. But for now, we have some more stories before we get to the Skype line. We're going to try to kind of run through these stories to make sure we have plenty of time for Skype. So let's get to it. Loki.
I know. I'm going to talk to you about shortages, and you know which company I'm talking about already when I say there's going to be a shortage of something. It's obviously Nintendo. And what did Nintendo not realize that they're going to have enough copies of? Well, of course, it's going to be the brand new Piranha Plant Amiibo. It is sold out pretty much at every retailer in Japan. And which I guess the figure doesn't even come out until February 15th of next year. But they've already sold out of it. And it's very hard to find, apparently. And one way you can possibly get it, well, of course, with all these, you know, deals online, Cyber Monday and whatnot. December 7th, there's going to be a limited box set of 63 amiibos. All of the amiibos that I'm assuming that appear in the new Smash Brothers game. And you can purchase that. But there's only 50 of them. And you can get that at Amazon Japan. It comes with a box and a poster.
It's a little excessive. I don't think I need that. I'm surprised to hear Piranha Plant is like crazy popular as it is, though. When they first announced it, I was like, all right, cool, I guess. Like, there's other characters I would have put in the game. Birdo, Wart, anything from Mario 2. But Piranha Plant, okay, whatever, go off.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I think, you know, just give it more time. I mean, they're just, I can't imagine they're going to run too short of these. I mean, it's not that, it's just a damn plastic figure with an RFID
chip in
it.
Maybe because amiibos have been kind of slipping a little bit, maybe they underestimated demand. You know what I mean?
They still got time. I mean, yeah, we're talking about a thing that comes out in February. So, I mean, they have time to make more.
Get on it. All right. Rumors, but we'll do it because it's coming from a reliable tech website called Thurot, and then via Eurogamer, where it showed up on our radar. But Microsoft is apparently going to be launching a diskless version of the Xbox One in spring 2019. I also bring this up because this topic has come up before.
Several times.
This is a little deja vu, but it's only gaining more and more steam, which makes it look more and more true. So
how much
get used to this idea.
I mean, I'd have to see how much cheaper it would be, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Anyway, the next gen Xbox is supposed to be in 2020, so this is a little bit kind of like a bridge. The code name for this device is Scarlet. They're saying it's going to be sold substantially lower than it is now. It could be as low as $100 cheaper, pushing it at, I guess, under $200 US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if they could get the price to $100, I know that's asking a lot, but that would be insane.
Because, like, the Xbox One S was selling for $199, I think, this week, you know, during Black Friday and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like,
You're thinking they need to get it down to like $149 to make it really. So Black Friday has kind of screwed perceptions in that regard.
I mean, I want to say, because they had, it was starting at $199 and they had like a game bundle and stuff like that. So it's just I don't want the S. If I'm going to buy a system, it's going to be, yeah, because they have the Minecraft 1 terabyte Minecraft creators bundle that was $199. So they came with Minecraft and like some in-game currency and some other skins and stuff. And then they had the Xbox One X for like $399.
Also, Microsoft is apparently considering disc to digital, which I feel like we've heard this one too, meaning you can trade in a physical game in return for a digital download at certain participating retailers. That's kind of a big deal if that's really the case. That would be really the first of its kind to do that, to trade it in. And then I would assume that the company would be able to resell it. But how would you stop it from just getting traded back in over and over? Well, I guess they don't give you as much money. You probably have to still pay some type of money or something.
Probably some sort of redemption. Like you get it would be like for the retailer where they'd have to send it back to Microsoft to be destroyed or
maybe.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. Rumors still swelling about the next console and whether it will have a disc drive or not. The next gen of Xbox may go discless, which, deja vu, there was controversy at the beginning of Xbox One.
It should still have a drive.
The speculation is that that's where Microsoft will ultimately fall, is that the next console will still have a drive. But I don't think it would be as damning as it was this last time, because more and more people are going
here's
digital.
Here's why. It's not necessary. And I'm on the fence. Like, I purchase most of my stuff digitally, and yeah, I get it. You know, it's. But then again, I just got an Xbox, or not an Xbox, a PlayStation 4 Pro, and so a lot of the, like, I haven't really been downloading a lot of the 4K content. So for me, like, I would think one of the draws with the 4K, like a Ultra HD Blu-ray drive would be, you know. I would want to have those on disk versus downloading that stuff, because that's several, you know, gigabytes worth of data for movies. And the hard drives that are in these, you know, like 1 terabyte, it's all right for now, but that's going to fill up really fast, especially when you have games like Fallout 76 with like, oh, hey, it's a 48.
Or 4K textures, like, are like 90 gigabyte games.
Unless you like start plopping like 50 or like 5 terabyte drives in there and, you know, convince all the internet providers to not give me a, you know, download cap, then yeah, maybe that might work. But I think until technology elsewhere catches up, you're gonna have to include a drive in there. Like, whether it may be that you're skewing more towards digital downloads, that's cool, that's more money in your pocket, honestly, because you're not having to sell, you know, physical copies to retailers who's going to take a cut out of it. But at the same time, that's still going to be a part of it. I mean, and I'm still going to buy physical games, especially if I find out, like, oh, hey, I've got to download like 100 gigabytes that's going to be on the disc or something like that.
And I don't think anyone should, like, you know, freak out, because again, these are rumors. But I think this is exactly the type of conversation Microsoft is trying to feel out. Like, is the gamer base ready to be discless, or do we still need to kind of have the disc? And I think ultimately they will fall on the side.
I don't think it would be like, I mean, honestly, like, I don't watch a lot of Ultra HD content yet, because I don't have anything that will play it. I mean, I could get digital copies for my PlayStation 4, but I just don't want to buy those.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on. Since Microsoft's got a clear shot next E3, we'll see. Loki. Yep.
So apparently there is some UK commission that was looking at gambling in games. So they put out a report that talked about loot boxes. And, you know, according to the commission, it says the gambling commission takes the view of the ability to convert in-game items to cash or to trade them for other items of value means that they attain a real-world value and become articles of money or money's worth, whereas gambling facilities are offered to British consumers, including with the use of in-game items that can be converted into cash or traded for items of value. A gambling license is required. So they do see these loot boxes as, you know, gambling. And even with that, they said, you know, that they found that 39% of UK children 11 to 16 have spent their own money gambling. 14% had done so within the last week. They said that the average amount spent during that time was 16, looks like 1660 or 16 euro, and then 60% of young people believe that their parents wouldn't want them gambling. 19% claim that their guardians had strict rules against gambling. So they're actually talking about like actually gambling, not necessarily that they purchase loot boxes or something like that. But right. They see that because of this being more prevalent in games, there's a correlation with gambling going up, you know. So it's interesting to see that. And I think with other companies like, you know, Belgium, whatever, blocking some of these, be interested to see how it goes. And I know that like some of these companies like EA have said, well, we're just not going to comply with the laws. You know, you block it, we're just not going to do it, which makes you think, you know, like, wow, they're willing to break the law to sell this stuff. I mean, that's a lot.
Well, because they're still convinced in their mind that it's not what these companies are saying it is. They're going to have to get dragged to court to stop doing it.
Well, yeah, it's just
and
like
then ultimately they'll just stop releasing.
Well, it's
in
just
these
like
countries.
Cigarette companies saying that, you know, cigarettes weren't addictive. I mean, come on, it's the same thing. They know what they're doing, so yeah. It's just, I don't know.
All right. Well, while we wait to see what shapes up with that legally, moving on to a lot of talk about accessibility in the gaming industry this week, as there's been several different reports kind of concerning accessibility with some recent titles, including the Spyro Reignited Trilogy. Apparently, it does lack subtitles in the Spyro Reignited Trilogy, and there are no subtitles. So, you know, people that you need to rely on subtitles are a little bit irritated about this. I'd like to use subtitles.
At least that's something that they could probably patch in, so that's not such a big deal.
Yeah, but it is also one of the things they shouldn't have to patch. Like, it should have done it out the gate, right? But, yeah, I don't consider myself disabled when it comes to, like, needing the subtitles, but like, I'm definitely, like, because I get really distracted by, like, background noise. Like, if I'm at a restaurant or something, I have to really focus on who's talking to me and what they're saying, because a lot of times I will get so easily distracted by noise around me. Like, I'm not necessarily, like, trying to eavesdrop on conversations, but, like, I can't focus on one conversation. It's what happens, the background noise. So, sometimes with, like, even playing games and stuff, like, that, like, all of that other noise gets in the way of the dialogue, and I have a hard time understanding. So I prefer to play with subtitles. I actually prefer to watch movies with closed captions, too. I will go to the theater and watch them without and be all right, but I prefer when I'm at home to watch with closed captions. And, you know, some people get really annoyed with that because it's like, when you're just reading them, but I'm sorry, it's just, like, I miss too much shit if I don't have it on.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I do this with games. I far prefer to have the subtitles on in games. So, yeah. Anyway, apparently Activision did provide a statement to the blog Game Pit, who said, when Toys for Bob set out to make an awesome game collection, there were certain decisions that needed to be made throughout the process. The team remained committed to keep the integrity and legacy of Spyro that fans remembered intact. While there's no industry standard for subtitles, the studio and Activision care about the fans' experience, especially with respect to accessibility for people with different abilities, and will evaluate going forward. Kind of a shit answer, in my opinion. They're trying to say, well, since the first game didn't have subtitles, you don't need it now. That's kind of like what they're saying, basically. Kind of a shit answer. I think that could have been worded a lot better. Just basically, like, instead they could have just kind of fessed up and said, you know, since they weren't in the original game and we remastered the first game, we neglected to include it, but we are looking to include it in the future to make sure that our games are as accessible as possible. I think there could have been a better way they could have worded that. Maybe took a little bit of ownership, but they did not with that statement, in my humble opinion. SSJ100 Matt agrees with me in chat. That is a shit answer. Anyway, also Pokemon Let's Go getting some pushback on the motion controls, because the motion controls in the game are mandatory. So, of course, that means that players with certain disabilities can't play. I have only been playing with the Joy-Con to, like, throw the ball. I have not played in portable mode at all.
I have played all in portable mode.
That's so interesting, because to me, I think that's one of the reasons why I love this game more than, like, any other Pokemon game, is because I can play it on the fucking television finally. And that means a lot for me. So I like to play with the motion controls. But regardless of how I feel, there's, you know, some gamers out there that are not able to do,
by the
obviously
way,
that motion or the gyro motion.
I'm going to throw in a few life hacks here for you for Pokemon.
Oh, dear.
Let's
All right.
Go as well.
All right.
So here's some fun little cheats or stuff you can do. So because in the game you can have anybody join up with you with your Pokemon at any time, you can actually, when you're fighting trainers and stuff like that, and you find a difficult battle, you activate the other controller by shaking it, and then you get to have two Pokemon out at once versus their one at the same time.
Hmm. So anyway, apparently, because you have to use some of the gyro even when you're in portable mode,
yeah,
like
you
it
do.
Just it sucks for people that can't like pick that up and hold it and do the whole thing. So, Nintendo's kind of getting called out on that a little bit. But there's also some positive examples. Eurogamer kind of spotlighted amongst all this. Spider-Man PlayStation 4 has a lot of great accessibility features in it. For example, you can, you know, change things like parallaxing. You can make subtitles gigantic. You can do quick time events that autocomplete. You can change button taps to hold. Like, you can really break it down. And other games that have been called out for doing accessibility right, God of War, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, Celeste, are all games that really kind of go out of their way to be more and more accessible. So, you know, certainly something I think we just need to be thinking about developing games is how can as many people as possible play this game? You know what I mean? I think it's going to be tough. Like when it comes to things like VR, like some people just aren't going to be able to do VR, period.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's tough. Like you have to kind of ask these hard questions about, well, you know, how far can we go to actually be able to include people? You know, and like a game like Beat Saber is going to be very, very, very hard to make inclusive. You know what I mean? But I think, again, you just kind of have to put the question in the back of your mind. How can we easily incorporate as many people as possible to be able to enjoy this game? And subtitles, come on, that's an easy thing. Like, that's super easy. Button remapping, that should be like a non-issue, easy peasy thing, which is why it's built into PlayStation firmware at this point, right? You know, so anyway. All right. Well, let's move on. We got a couple more stories for you guys. Then we're going to open up the Skype line if anyone wants to call in at Orange Lounge Radio. But first, Loki.
We've got new Half-Life coming out. Fan-made Half-Life, of course. So there was a whole remake of the original Half-Life called Black Mesa, which came out not too long ago. And, of course, with that, there was still the last part of the game, which is set on the alien world of Zen. So now the Black Mesa team has released a trailer for Black Mesa Zen, which is going to be the final chapter of the game, which is set to be released around the second quarter of next year. And it looks fantastic. It looks so great. So, you know, since it's largely original work, it says it'll run for about 6 hours and very colorful.
I will have to ask Alan if he plans to play that, because he'll visit the Half-Life series about once a year or so. He's still on his Dark Souls.
I'm sure he's played Black Mesa.
Oh, he has. But if they're gonna like finally do that, you know, last sequence and everything, he'll probably go back and revisit. So
yeah, it looks pretty amazing.
Yeah. And then last but certainly not least tonight, I mean, this is one of those things where, hello, I think everybody heard this news already, but we have to mention, of course, at some point that Stan Lee, who, you know, contributed so much to nerd culture, you know, obviously through Marvel Comics, which, of course, expanded into the video game universe, did pass away while we were out on break at the age of 95. So he did pass away on Monday, he was just right after, I think, the last Orange Lounge Radio. He passed away. It was November 12th, I think was the day. He was 95 years old, though, so what an amazing life. I think many of us would be so fortunate to lead such an amazing life. Stan Lee, of course, behind heroes like Spider-Man, The Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, and so on. And, you know, he did do a lot for video games as well. It's not, you know, just certainly Marvel, or not just comics, because Spider-Man's PlayStation 4 games. He made appearances in the Lego Marvel series. He showed up in The Amazing Spider-Man, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. He actually made a cameo in DC Teen Titans Goes,
yes,
to the movie, believe
it
or not.
It was hilarious.
So, I mean, that's cool that, you know, you can have a little love between, you know, the factions.
He was in Wreck-It Ralph, too. He had a cameo. Well,
yep.
He had a cameo, but it wasn't like a spoken cameo. It was just kind of like a little Easter egg they threw in there.
Yeah. So anyhow, it was video games as well as music, and I'm sure as well as comics and movies. I'm sure a lot of folks very sad to hear that. But again, 95, what a wonderful, long, great life. And I know many people had seen him at conventions. He was doing those conventions, man, right up to the last year. I remember he was at Dragon Con just a couple years ago. He had a floor auto himself at Dragon Con, but when you're Stan Lee, that's what you get. So rest in peace, Stan Lee. Let's open up the Skype line, Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. If you want to give us a call, if there's something we haven't talked about on the show yet, or maybe something we did talk about that you want to lend your piece to, we will open up the Skype line right now. But I'm not going to keep it open very long. So if you want to get in, I would call pretty soon because I see that dinner is almost ready. So I'm ready to wrap up this show and get to it. Oh,
it's fully ready.
Oh, Alan is it's ready. It's fully ready. So... anyhow, while we wait to see if anything... oh, never mind. We got a call coming in right now. Let's get to it. Hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
It's the one and only Ronmo. How is everybody tonight?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. After a little chaos during Black Friday sales, I can't complain.
Yeah, you know, I didn't go out there. I mean, I went out to go play video games, but I didn't fight any of the traffic at malls or things like that on Black Friday. It was a normal day for me. Well, I had to work on Black Friday. I don't work retail or any of that stuff. I mean, you brave souls that do. But I work an office job, but just the nature of my industry, we had to be open on Friday, so.
Well, that's understandable, so I get that.
So it's just another day for me. But how was your weekend adventure with all that? Get any good deals?
That Spider-Man PlayStation 4 for $200, my dude.
So how are you liking PlayStation 4?
I just hooked it up. It's as it's updating, you open the Skype line, so I kind of did a backflip from my TV over to the chair.
So a little too early to tell, huh?
Yes. Despite the drama behind me getting it, I'm good.
So you picked up not just the Spider-Man that's included, right? But I saw, because you gave me a shout-out on Twitter, thank you, because you picked up Tetris Effect, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, well, and where's my kickback from Enhanced Games? Where's that? All right. And then you picked up one other thing, too, right? The Kingdom Hearts thing, right?
And I actually traded in the Spider-Man game and got Dragon Quest XI.
That's fun. Oh, so you didn't even want the Spider-Man game.
Oh, you're giving me reasons. I'm like, you have to understand something. I have a very eclectic taste in video games. Like, I can't stand a lot of RTS-type games, but I can sit there and play Command & Conquer, the Age of series, the Project Crow. I can sit there and play those all day. I'll stare at Final Fantasy Tactics, go two rounds, and be like, I'm done with this.
All right.
Very eclectic taste.
That's fine. I consider myself pretty eclectic when it comes to games, too. But, you know, there's certain things that I'm just never going to gel with, like Call of Duty. But even then, like, I watch other people play it, and I go, this is pretty.
I will sit there and play Battlefield. I picked up Battlefield because it was free. I'm like, I won't pay $60 for it. I might pay $10, but, you know, free. Free is free.
Yeah, free is free.
I didn't want to go on about my PS4. I'm just here to back up a lot of what you said about E3, okay? I'm walking home. I'm screaming to the world that you are preaching the gospel about E3 and PAX and all of that. I'm like, this is part of the reason why I stopped going to PAX.
And you care to elaborate? What do you think I got right on this?
It's not fun anymore. PAX was fan run. Now it's industry run. I have heard from people that you can't get as much free swag anymore. It's harder to get badges. It's more of a glorified dealer's hall than anything else. I mean, with the way technology is going, the fact that Sony's off doing her own thing, it's not surprising everybody else is. Plus the fact that you have like smaller gaming conventions popping up and indie companies are going to, and sometimes you might find a third party company going to showing stuff off. And also, let's say there is this awesome game coming out at E3 and you had to be one of the elite few to try it out. You ain't got to worry about that, because if you wait a few weeks, that company, Sony, EA, whoever, will be at New York Comic Con with the game, and you can hop on the line and play it then. Or this convention where you can hop on the line and play it then.
Or you just watch it all on YouTube. We don't even have to wait at all.
Exactly. I mean, I had a friend who was all hyped about going to E3 last year. She hasn't mentioned anything about going this year. Because even though they opened it up to the general public, a lot of convention goers are not used to how E3 runs.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of them go to like comic cons and other stuff where it kind of closes at 8. You still have stuff, panels going on to like 10 o'clock and stuff. But E3, there really is no panels. It's just rows of demos and other stuff. And then it's over. You can find your friends or see if you can get into an industry party or something like that, you know?
Even this Final Fantasy thing was over at 6 o'clock Friday and Saturday. So it was it was more like 8 o'clock because of the concerts. But still, it kind of left that whole evening where it's like, well, what do we do now? Oh, well, at least we're in Las Vegas and we can hang with our guildies. You know what I mean? So there's that.
So, you know,
I do want to point out, though, just to be clear, you know, the moment when E3, I kind of had my aha moment about, I'm not sure this is worth the money to come down here and take off work for this anymore. You know when the moment was?
What?
It was the last year I went, when we were basically we had to justify ourselves as a legitimate press outlet to get tickets to this Assassin's Creed theater experience. Wait in line once we have tickets to get in the Assassin's Creed thing. Finally watch the thing, which looked neat. I was, you know, I'm not even a huge Assassin's Creed person, and I was like, oh, I was into it. And come to find out the whole thing's on YouTube already. So that thing I had to fight and wait in line for, it was just there on YouTube. I wanted to see it.
Rob, you can't see it right now, but I'm rolling my eyes so hard in the back of my head about that. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
But that's the reality of, you know, a big piece of where E3 kind of lost its luster, where I'm like, again, if I could just watch this on YouTube, why am I coming down here to spend all this money? You know, that's what it is. So. Yeah.
And the fact that it's just crowds. And, you know, I already said it. If I have to take personal time off to sit in front of my computer to get my tickets, book my hotel rooms, if I got to get a squad together to do that, that's it. To me, the convention is not worth going through that for. Yeah. I refuse.
Yeah. So, and Bobby kind of says in chat, you know, kind of a hits home type of comment. I gave up on E3 when they told me I wasn't legit anymore, even with my LLC and my audience. I got tired of fighting. PAX said the same thing to me, and I gave up on them too. But I remember when Bobby put together at PAX the little indie podcast alley one year at PAX. That was through the whole All Games thing that we had one year when we were with them. So it's crazy to me how, like, that attitude is gone.
See, you know, I feel you. I used to be able to do press for Comic-Con. But as it went more industry, when they denied me, I said, it ain't worth it. They told me I did not have enough hits on my site for them to give me a press pass.
And it's so not, like, it's not. Like, I don't want to make this clear because I don't want people being like, oh, they're whining or it's the ego or something like that. It's not really that, but it's this whole thing where it's like, well, if you don't want me, why am I going to bother going? And I get so much more out of fan run expos. That's why I love Dragon Con, fan run. MAGFest was a lot of fun, fan run. Like, I'm just getting more rewards being a loud ass fan, which I think is a good way to describe a podcaster or a Twitch streamer, a loud ass fan.
Exactly.
We tend to succeed at fan cons.
Oh, speaking of, let me tell you this quick story. I'm going to get out of here. There's a small local convention. I kind of had a one-sided argument with them. They denied me press. I'm just like, can you tell me the reason why? Because I like to know why. That way I can fix things for the following year. Learn from that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They told me that my press site wasn't good enough because we're not like the local newspaper or the TV station. I'm sorry. ABC is not going to send a news van to your little podunk convention to do coverage. When a local newspaper does that, they're going to write up a little story, two pictures tops. You got small press sites like myself that will go around and take hundreds of pictures, interview all these people, and put all this content up.
ABC is going to come out there and get pictures of all the people in costume and be like, ooh, look what's going on at the Hilton this week. And then they'll show, you know, people dressed in costume behind the current temperatures. That's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway. All right. Rama, I'm going to let you go to see if we get any more calls in. But any other thoughts for our listeners tonight?
I don't have any right now, but it is what it is.
All right. Well, take care, my friend.
You too, brother.
All right. Bye. All right. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. Bobby's popping off in chat, but he's right on the money. Bobby says, my favorite PAX story was that they invited Rob and I to be on a panel about building a podcast community. They removed the panel from the schedule and then denied us press passes. I forgot that that happened because that was so shitty. I honestly don't have another word for it. Sorry. And maybe that explains where some of my bitterness from PAX comes from. But that was so shitty. Like...
Or wasn't there, like, a year where they, like, denied it press passes or something, even though, like, we were part of, like, the Microsoft, you know, like, we had our icon, or, you know, stuff, the podcasting communities, like, we had our own, you
I'm
know,
sure
icons.
I'm sure that was E3 or
Gamer
one
Tags.
Of those, yeah, it was ridiculous.
It's like, but we, you know, we're recognized, we have our own thing on Xbox, you know, you get your own gamer tag with our show picture.
You know what, and I remember that, because Bobby says we had a listener who bought extra passes and sold us a face value because we had already booked the travel and hotel. That's why it was so shitty, because I'd already spent my money to go out there so I could be on this fucking panel, and then they didn't even end up doing it. So, whatever, you know what, I'm doing great panels at other cons, so that's that. But that was, I mean, what else would you call it? We booked travel and hotel, and then we can't even get tickets because they pulled it at the last minute. And then, God.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I ever really, I don't know if I ever properly popped off on that on the show, because I was still trying to maintain some sense of, you know, professionalism. Oh, maybe we'll be invited back next year. But in my old age, I give less and less of a fuck. So there you go. That's the real tea on what happened with PAX. But then, I mean, we were there. And not only is that, like, in the back of my head, but just the whole time I'm at this convention going, this solo sucks anyway. Except PAX. That's kind of just how that year was for me. Except the people. The people are awesome, and the people are wonderful and all that. So, all right. Let's see. We'll give one more chance for any calls to come in at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word, on Skype. Meanwhile, while we wait for that call to come in, Loki, any other last-minute stories to talk about?
No, I didn't have anything. But I did see, like, you know, rumor thread or whatever talking about the whole Sony not going to, you know, E3 and stuff like that. And one of the rumors was, well, you know, those games that they've been showing off at E3 last year, well, those are all going to be launch titles for the new system. So they can't really show off those again because it's going to be, I don't know, that they might move those to launch titles. But I would say then what the hell is going to come out in 2019, which
no,
doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand. I mean... You might have something that kind of does both, like especially if PlayStation 5 is backwards compatible with PlayStation 4 titles, then you, which I know, like
Sony backwards compatible.
I know, bitch, but I hope Sony's fucking figure that out at this point, right? But it's kind of like when the Wii U came out, I feel like there were still some last minute Wii games that they were kind of like trying to push, like, oh, but you can play them on the Wii U, so they're for both systems. Like, wasn't that when finally like the Operation Rainfall shit started coming out, like which I don't even remember all those games now. Isn't that horrible? Like the Tower, Pandora's Tower, was that one of the games?
I don't remember.
The Guardian. I can't even remember those games. Somebody in chat help me out. But like all those games were like finally coming out at the end of Wii's run. And so they were kind of like saying, well, they're kind of like also launch titles for the Wii U and that whole thing. Oh, yeah. And Bobby Blackwolf points out Breath of the Wild was still on Wii U. That's right. Thank you, ActDeft. Tower of Pandora, The Last Story, and Xenoblade Chronicles. So I was close. That was close. All right. Well, no other calls are coming in, so I think that is going to end it for the Skype line tonight. But thank you guys so much, those that got through. And, you know, if you want to send us an email, you can always do that. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. But for now, we're going to wrap up tonight's show. It's a little after 9 o'clock anyway. It's time for us to be done. Thanks for coming back this week with us after we missed last week. We'll continue to be here throughout the holidays. Thankfully, the big holidays are on, like, Tuesdays this year. So we should still be here on Sundays and pushing through with our big, a lot of changes here at OLR headquarters ourselves. So really excited about that. Thank you, as always, for listening to our show. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But, you know, the voices kind of like have to be here to put out on air and all that good stuff. So help us spread the word. We'd really appreciate it. Let's go around and get everybody's final thought. My final thought tonight is dinner's getting cold. We need to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Loki, your final thought tonight.
Well, it's not tomorrow. A week from tomorrow, I get jury duty.
Oh, boy.
I am not looking forward to that.
You know, best to get it around the holidays, though, because it's going to be like so much time off. Then you're less likely to get those trials that are going to go on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it's just an inconvenience because I'm normally the one that drops off the kids, so I'm
inconvenienced.
So I'm not going to be the one. Normally, like last time that I had jury duty, I was in the call center, so I was like, let's get on the fucking longest trial on the face of the earth, because I don't want to go back to the call center, and now I'm not in the call center, so it sucks again.
I haven't been on jury duty. So I was on a jury in 2006, right, for like probably about 2 weeks, and then I got it again the next year, and I haven't gotten it since, knock on wood, there might have been one time since then. I think when I was working at my current employer, I got the notice, but like it was one of those, my group number never got called in.
Well, we'll see. I don't know if I have to go in yet. Yeah. Since it's on a Monday, I'll find out. I guess on that Friday or this Friday. So we'll see. But it sucks. It's just it's an inconvenience because it's in the middle of Sacramento. If it was like, El Placerville or something like that, it wouldn't be so big deal. But whatever.
SG100 Matt says, damn, I remember that trial Rob was on. I feel old. SG100 Matt, you are. I wish I could say something comforting, but that was 2006. You have been a longtime supporter of the show, and we appreciate you. We appreciate all of you. And thanks so much to all of you for listening tonight and those of you that get a chance to check out YYR's game. Thanks again so much for that. That was a really pleasant surprise. I appreciate that. Hope you all had a great holiday. We'll see you in 7 days. We'll do it again next time here at Orange Lounge Radio. Have a wonderful night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.